Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Real Debaters Podcast. Hello, listener. I am Michael Petro, and on the show this week, we've got a real talk for you featuring Dan Bond, Emily's lovely husband, and Rob Strachan, and me. We've got old school film techniques that we miss. Here, I'll give you an example. Matte paintings or hand-drawn animation. We review a bunch of old school methods that may have been removed from usage due to how expensive they are, how time-consuming they are, which ones do we miss, which ones can we throw away. And then we jump into on-screen acting duos, two actors that we absolutely love playing across from each other, and then review some of the greats. So that's who's on the show. That is what is on the show. Besides that, April 27th, live from Little Brown Jug, 336 William Avenue in Winnipeg, Manitoba. We are doing our first movie trivia night, so be nice. It's the first time we've done this. No, we're fine. We got three rounds of general movie trivia. I can't stress that enough. I don't want anybody to be afraid of not being able to do this. This is stuff that's in the ether. This is pop culture shit. Don't bring your phone. Use your table. There's teams of four, so there's three other brains besides you. And we'll have some fun questions. We'll do some prize giveaways. We're going to send you guys to the movies. And you can drink delicious beer while you do it. Who doesn't love beer and movie trivia, or just trivia in general? Who gives a shit? Actually, no, movie trivia is probably the best. April 27th, tickets are $5. Eventbrite. You can do them on the app. You can buy them on the website. Wherever there's an Eventbrite that sells those tickets, we'll be there. Search the Real Debaters Trivia Night. And, 60 tickets only. Limited selection due to size. So it's not a sales gimmick to make you rush or anything. Literally, there is only 60 tickets available. So if you want to come, bring three of your friends. 7 to 9 p.m., 336 William Avenue. Little Brown Jug. We will be there asking questions. And it'll be like a show. If you've been to one of our live debates, we kind of like to add a little bit of production value to make it worth your time. So it'll be worth your $5, I swear. That's it. That's all. I will cue that reel. And you enjoy the show.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film. 1,000 feet. 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Debaters Podcast. Welcome back to the show. Hello, listener. I'm one of your fabled hosts, Michael Petro. Sitting in studio with me is
Jimmy Skinner.
No, get off your phone and say your real name.
It's Rob Strachan.
And then Oliver in the corner.
And I'm Dan Bond.
Dan Bond, if you've listened to the show before, ladies and gentlemen, is the husband that we talk about oh so affectionately to Emily. Emily's husband instead of Emily today. And I said before the show, we'll just treat you guys as one person who's free. Come on over.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
She's in Seattle right now. So
what she is at work?
Dodgeball.
Fuck.
I feel like that happens though. After you've been like with somebody a long time, you like legally you're like considered the same entity.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, unless you like murder somebody.
Well, then
you're helping
each other hide the body. So yeah. Like, yeah, it depends on the.
Isn't there a law where you're allowed to tell your spouse is allowed to like plead something to not disclose stuff because there's like a confidentiality of the partnership?
You can't incriminate your partner.
That's what it is. Yeah, is that a law in Canada or is it just the U.S.?
I don't know. I've seen it on movies.
I don't even know. Is that like pleading the fifth or some shit? I don't know.
It's a legal trap, right? Yeah, like people have gotten married so that they don't have to testify against each other.
I think we need to get a law and order expert here. And when I say law and order, not an expert in the law, but an expert in the
law and order show.
I've seen lots of episodes.
So would you consider yourself an expert?
Like how many episodes before? Do you need 10,000 hours of law and order?
Oh, I don't know. That's too many. I've definitely seen all of them once.
Does special units, SUV or whatever, does that count?
Yeah,
or what? I don't know.
The sport utility version of Law
and
Order?
The sport utility version? Or is it just like, it's like classic with Mr. Big?
I think classic.
Yeah, yeah.
OG. There was like 37 seasons of SVU.
I used to watch Law and Order every day after like school.
Yeah, well, I
was in junior high and high school.
I'd come home from college and it would be, there was an A&W show and it was a police show and then it was Law and Order.
A&E, you mean?
Yeah,
not A&W.
I'm hungry.
So we got SUV. We got A&W.
A&W channel.
I can't wait to fuck up an acronym.
Not to be confused with Arts and Entertainment Channel. But that's what it was on A&E after school.
That's right.
Or like in the early afternoon.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. Let's just get Ice-T on the show. It'll be a certified Law and Order expert.
No, because he's on the new school.
Well, yeah.
He's not on the original.
But, you know, nonetheless, Law and Order, respectable. All right, fine. I won't call him.
No, we don't want him.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Unless he's coming to talk about body count, like, you know, when he was in that badass fucking rock rap band.
Or the movie he did where he like gets hunted. What's the one?
Oh,
Most Dangerous Game.
Yeah. Which is actually based on a short story that was written in like the 20s or something.
Yeah. Rutger Hauer. I believe I said that right this time. Not Rutger. Rutger. Rutger.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga. Rutabaga Hauer.
Rest in peace, asshole.
Topics on the show this week are old school aspects of film that we miss. And then your favorite on-screen actors, combinations, tag teams. What two actors do you love seeing on screen together? What movies are they from? So on and so forth. But before we get into that, one announcement. April 27th, live from Little Brown Jug, we are doing Real Debaters Does Trivia Night. And it's going to be three rounds of general movie trivia from 7 to 9 p.m. Tickets are on sale right now at Eventbrite. You can buy them on the app. You can buy them on the website. You can buy them on this episode right now because of the link in the show notes. It'll say buy the tickets here, and they're only $5.
Well, I'll buy my ticket there then.
Yeah, well, no, just in limited seating, actually.
Oh, you got to pre-buy this shit, man. Yeah. There ain't going to be no fucking seats at the door.
No, that's what I mean. On your
we
link,
are so
on your
popular.
Website,
there you go.
I will use your link.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Because then you'll be the one person I can track on it that's gone to that link. It's $5 for the tickets, ladies and gentlemen. And like I said, this is general movie knowledge trivia. This is stuff that's in the ether. This is your grandma's trivia. This isn't shit that's complicated. We don't need
champion. Is your grandma's trivia?
Well, your grandma could probably answer a couple of these questions.
Like how many hogs heads to the rod does your car get for gas mileage?
No.
Like that kind of grandma? Call?
No, but like what animal's head was in the bed of the movie producer in Godfather 1?
Goat.
Shark.
Horse, guys. Come on. Why are you
on the show? Well, how did we get that wrong?
Yeah, I was thinking of Jaws.
Fucking old McDonald in here. Anyways, it'll be questions like that, ladies and gentlemen. So get your tickets now. $5, Eventbrite. Limited seats. There's only 60 tickets available. We're not doing that as a cash grab. It's literally the capacity of Little Brown Jug.
I feel like the logistics to actually have captured a shark, cut its head off, and put it in there would have been very complicated even for the mob at that time.
You mean a horse? You said shark.
No, I was saying if they were.
It would be complicated.
Yeah,
sure.
I was making a comment about how awesome the shark would have been, but how much harder it would have been to achieve.
Not really. You could have just gone to the zoo or an aquarium.
That you still had to like.
It's in a barrel. You can just shoot it.
It is New York. They are a coastal town.
Well, I'm sure.
But guys, you literally could go to a fucking stable and the horse is right there with its head stuck out already.
Are we talking about sharks still?
Lots.
Nah, I don't believe it. It's a city. I've seen it in movies. I've seen a single horse.
They literally have horses in Central Park, motherfucker.
So,
they're police horses.
No, they're not. They pull those carriages that you see in rom-coms.
Well, they're working horses. You can't take those.
So, movie trivia, April
27th,
7 to 9
p.m. Like half-baked.
Oh, my God. Okay, you guys clearly want to start the show. Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Step off this fucking mortal coil and talk about film. All right, Rob, it's been a minute. What'd you watch this week?
I watched. I'm gonna read the name because I keep butchering it every time I say it. Last night, I finally watched this brand new Nick Cage movie, but new to like 2022.
Yeah, new.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yeah, you got it right.
And part of the reason, like, it's been on my watch list for a while, but I was watching some reels or some YouTube shorts the other day, and there's that scene in the car where Nick Cage looks over, and he's like, it just looks like haggard, like, what the fuck is going on? And then he looks over, and Pedro Pascal's character is just like
having the time of his life.
Well, they basically drop acid and decide to drive a car somewhere, and that's where the scene happens.
I have yet to see it, so whatever you're telling me is
it's
new.
It's awesomely terribly bad, but awesome at the same time. I really liked it.
100% agree. I love it.
And it kind of reminded me of JVCD, like that Jean-Claude or JCVD.
Like parody kind of thing?
Like kind of a parody, like how he's kind of like making fun of himself, like playing himself but making fun of himself. And Nick Cage did a really great job of that. I'm gonna go deep. And have you guys ever seen eight and a quarter or eight and a half or whatever?
8mm?
No, the Fellini movie?
No, actually.
So there's a Fellini movie from the 60s, I believe, and it's a movie about the making a movie, and it kind of there was a few throwbacks to that movie in that. And maybe I'm totally out, but there's something reminiscent in there. I just wickedly hilariously action-packed Nick Cage doing Nick Cage better than Nick Cage has ever done Nick Cage.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's just It was just fucking so good. And Pedro Pascal, I love that guy because he has such range. It's like, you know, he's doing the fucking Mandalorian, right? Then he's fucking, you know, doing fucking Mario Kart fucking parodies on SNL. He's doing this fucking movie. He's fucking in The Last of Us as Joel. Like, he's just fucking great.
He's got two shows on weekly for the next 3 weeks until Last of Us ends.
Well, that's tomorrow.
Is that tomorrow?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. You haven't watched Last of Us?
No, I've got it downloaded. But
well, that's good, though. You're going to be able to crush the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. I'm waiting until the end. I'm going to do them all at once.
You're in for a treat, my friend. Yeah. But, like, I can't remember the last time an actor had two TV shows playing at the same time. Like, that shit just don't line up normally. That means you're in high fucking demand.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's great.
That's like Jay Baruchel level shit. Remember when he had, like, three fucking movies all at the same time? And you were like, how is this kid in so many fucking awesome movies all at the same time?
Yeah.
And then his career went to shit.
And fizzled out.
Then he got,
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Jay Baruchel? This Is the End, Seth Rogen's buddy, the skinny guy who comes from Canada, Goon, what, Kid Street, the hand clapping shit over your head, wasn't he in that? This, Kids,
no, I've never saw.
Where you get slimed in a car.
You're talking a lot of Canadian shows here, I think.
Yeah, but you're part of the fucking Commonwealth.
Yeah, well, I don't.
You didn't have our cable?
No.
What do you mean? That wasn't on BBC Six? Like, what?
Oh shit! No, like I've read the reviews on Massive Talent, and just like I can't imagine how much fun it would be for an actor to be like, "Hey, play yourself."
Neil Patrick Harris is in it too,
isn't he? His agent?
He plays his agent. There's a Haman awesome. Scene where they're like, you're just like, "What the fuck?"
Are they full on? Is everything hanging out?
No. In the Haman, you're not complete. You're naked, but you wear that towel thing that's really tight.
Oh, I'm so glad I've never been to a hammam. This is what I would do.
You'd be so wrong.
Yeah, it's like a Turkish bath.
So wrong in a hammam. Yeah. That's a bad. Okay.
You get hit with like fucking. What, are they olive branches or some shit?
I don't know.
Fuck, I don't know.
So you liked it?
I liked it. Yeah. I liked it.
I've seen it and I loved it.
Yeah, it was good.
I read that they really had to pitch him like three or four times before he was like, okay, fine, this isn't making fun of me. This is making me awesome.
Because he's fucking awesome.
Well, and like this week too, right?
And
like,
and the guy, and the Pedro Pascal's character is a super fan. Like he's a super, like,
so it's a relatable movie because you're a super fan.
I wouldn't say to this level. Like I don't have a wax statue of him from Face Off with the two fucking gold guns from the fucking production.
Is that where
but
he's
you
like,
would if you could.
You know it. You know it. You would. If you could buy one.
I totally would. Yeah. I could eat a peach for hours.
How many peaches out of 10 do you give it?
I would give it a solid 9 out of 10.
Really?
I think people should watch it. It's fun. It's not. It's just fun.
I will go next. I watched Babylon. Damien Chazelle. Three.
How was it?
It's really fun. It's really good. Like
hedonistic.
Super hedonistic. It's right at the turn of the 20s into the 30s when sound started to come into pictures.
Okay.
So you've got all these silent filmmakers who have no idea how to make a talkie, as they say.
Yeah.
And then in all.
Is Charlie Chaplin in it?
Yes, he is. And Tobey Maguire plays Charlie Chaplin. No, he
was
doesn't.
Was that who he was?
Well, he was a play on Chaplin. I don't know if he's. I haven't got there yet.
Okay.
But I haven't.
So they don't have actual actors. They're all like kind of like
based on
characters.
Semi-autobiographical. It's super hedonistic. Like you open on a young starlet pissing on some fat guy's face. You open on just like 47 pairs of boobs.
Whoa! Can we rewind that? For a second?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a golden shower scene right at the beginning?
Yeah, right after the elephant. Right after
opens to it,
yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, like 7 minutes in.
See, and that's why we don't need intricate animated fucking intros anymore. Why do you need that when we can just go, cut to golden shower?
But yeah, no, it's right around the 20s and the 30s. Everybody's got
that's what
their
we call
own,
a foreshadow.
Their own story to tell. Brad Pitt plays an aging actor.
Yeah.
What's her name? Jesus Christ, it's leaving me
Margot
here.
Robbie?
Thank you. Margot Robbie plays an up-and-coming starlet.
Is it Robbie or Robbie?
It's Robbie.
It's Robbie? Yeah. Robbie? And who else is it? There's a bunch of
there's
like
so many. There's lots of famous people in it. I can't remember who they are. Brad Pitt?
I feel like every movie has like 19 A-list actors in it now.
Yeah.
Well, it's a Chazelle movie too, so you can get a lot. Like he pulls a
plus
lot of weight.
Four and like 42 hours long, so you just put so many different.
It's longer than The Irishman.
So like
it's worth it though.
It's just a commentary on the way that like
how much boobs is in it?
37.
So like it's a commentary on the idea of how they made films then. But if you look at how they make films now, nothing's fucking changed in 100 years, which is the funny part of it, right? Like, people are losing their shit, yelling at each other. Some elephants getting dragged up a fucking hill to Bel Air, California.
The only difference is everybody's name gets put on the credits now.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. I can't wait to finish watching this. Like, I'll cut right back into it as soon as we're done this. I think it deserves, I don't know if it's Best Picture nominated off the top. Actually, hang on, is it?
Well, there's fucking like 15 movies again.
No, it didn't get
for Best Picture now.
It didn't get nominated. All in all, what I've seen so far, I'd give it like a 7.5, 8 out of 10. Like, it's not La La Land.
No.
It's definitely, it's an artistic piece. Dan, what'd you watch this week?
Well, I watched many things this week, but I think Picard is my favorite new thing I'm watching right now.
What season are you on? 3?
I've watched them all, but I didn't watch 2 because it was like a hot pot of stinking garbage.
I've only watched season 1.
And that was also pretty shit. But season 3 is amazing. Worf's kicking ass,
Worf's in it?
Worf's in it.
each season I hear they just keep bringing back another.
I feel like Michael Dorn needs some money, right? So
They're all back this time.
Sweet.
Riker,
Diana,
Sturgis.
Diana.
sorry,
I'm talking to the Star Trek. they're all back, and the story's amazing.
You gonna call him Weasley Crusher too, or what?
I think you'll find he's called the Traveler now.
I don't know enough. I Star Trek's not my jam, so
I'll Data.
Oh, potato, fucking potato on that one. I don't even know enough about Picard to even talk about it.
It's in the future.
When is it?
TNG.
It's set okay, so real it's time in the future from when the next gen ended. So Picard's an ex-admiral. He's Riker's captain. They've all got different, like, it's 20 years set in the future, and so everybody's the right age. So you don't have to
talk about Romulus. So he understands the reference of that.
Romulus. Talk about Romulus.
Like, why? how the planet blew up, and that's kind of like
season 1.
Yeah, but that's like a monument. The timeline is.
I have a feeling I know what's going on. I just don't know where the story's set and what's happening. Like, why all these people are all of a sudden coming back. I think
it's just
pretty fucking
continuing
neat.
The story. They're just like plopping back in as if like this is like we just didn't talk to them for 20 years, and now in 20 years later,
it's called Let's Take All the Characters from the Most Popular Star Trek Series, which was TNG. And let's fucking reboot it to a certain degree.
Requel.
So are they doing missions as a unit, or are they
just... No, because they're not together anymore. But so Worf and Raffi are doing something together. Raffi was introduced in season 2, I think.
Sure, I haven't seen it. So.
And then you've got Picard, Riker, 7 of 9, and Geordi LaForge's kid, and some other people on the
Geordi LaForge's kid. They couldn't get back Geordi.
Oh, he's coming back next episode.
Okay, all right.
And so they're all on
the
USS.
Don't have to take my word for it.
They're all on the USS Titan, trying to rescue Beverly Crusher's kid, who they didn't know, who turns out is actually Picard's kid. Spoilers, everybody. Sorry.
Ooh, Picard's getting a little.
But she left.
But this
she
is from years ago. Obviously.
Yeah, basically 20 years ago. Beverly and Picard fucked, and she just fucking left and cut off all contact with everybody. And the first episode, Picard gets a message from her saying, "Help, I need your help. You're the only one I can trust. Trust nobody." And then Picard brings in Riker, and then they kind of steal the Titan, and they go and try and investigate. It's really good. You should watch it.
So, like, how far into the future? It's like 50 years after TNG, right?
20. It's exactly the same age as when it left. Or 30, whatever it was.
Oh, you've all aged 20 years,
exactly.
It's got to be
30.
It's got to be 30 then. Yeah. Whatever, or 25, whatever it is from the final episode to now is the time.
I just assumed, like, in that Star Trek world, at that point, everyone's living to, like, 160.
Maybe.
Right?
Like, because it's the future, ages. Like,
well, because they're so good with fucking medicine and stuff. And,
sure,
and diet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but maybe when you get to 100, you decide you're going to go spend the rest of your time on Risa or something.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah.
Do I have to watch a lot of Next Generation to enjoy this?
Like, have you not watched
you don't
TNG?
Need,
not since I was a kid.
If you've
but
wa-
you've
if
seen
you,
it.
If you've
I've seen,
it
yeah.
Do you
I
know who
the
characters are?
I know. Yeah, oh, I know.
Do you know who Q is?
Yeah.
Then you're good.
You don't need Q for season 3. I don't watch season 1 and 2. They're garbage. Just don't watch them. pretend it didn't happen.
Okay.
Start in season 3 and enjoy it.
Okay.
Watch season 1 and 2 at 2x speed.
Supercut it. Just get right to the fucking end of it.
You don't even need that. Well, I can tell you, the first season, Romulus explodes and Picard turns into a robot. Second season,
whoa! I'm,
a robot?
Don't do spoilers.
Yeah, no, spoil away.
Like a data?
Yeah, he is the but he still ages and is the same. It's the whole plot. It's weird. And then the second one is with the Borg, and they go back to 2026. They did it because of COVID so that they could film outside without having all the restrictions and everything.
Oh, that's the worst.
And it made the story garbage. I never even finished the season.
Hmm. Interesting.
But I started season 3 and it's amazing.
That's crazy that they had such a shitty turnout for 1 and 2 that they're still on. They had
already filmed it.
Oh.
They filmed 2 and 3 together.
So they had to commit. And...
But they did it. They fucking...
Patrick Stewart could take a shit in a box and people would still pay to watch it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, God. Yeah. How many...
Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase that. Sir Patrick Stewart could take a shit in a box.
Thank you.
He's knighted. That would be a royal shit. That would be the highest ranking shit.
Well, it wouldn't be a royal shit.
He's
not royalty.
He's not royal.
He's just knight. He's a knight. Fuck, you need to learn your feudal fucking ranking system. Especially when you have Lord Bond here.
How many, I don't know, how many enterprises?
9 enterprises for season 3.
7 of 9 or just 9?
Just 9.
That's my bad joke for the week. Try the video.
I should have ranked it. All
right, listener, there you go. That's your weekly watch list. We're going to rifle through this one for you today. So moving on. First segment up. I found this list titled Old School Aspects of Film That We Miss. And I don't know if the three of us are the we in that scenario, but I thought it would be fun to go through them because we all come up around the 90s. Like, that's a big, I would say it's a big chunk of where our love of film kind of came from, or am I wrong on that?
80s.
80s for you? Late 80s into 90s or solid?
Well, I was born in the 70s.
Well, yeah.
So when was I?
Yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s was when my movie, I started to pay attention. And
Okay. I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, we had them. Sure, I had all the movies in the 80s, but I didn't really give two fucks about the style or what they made me feel until the 90s. And then the 90s was just so fucking chaotic.
Yeah, I watched Star Wars like 1,000 times as a kid, but I didn't really understand how good it was until I was...
You have a concept of why it's good, right?
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate it until I bought it in the re-release THX VHS that I, like, spent all my birthday money on. It was, like, $120 back then.
Then you re-bought it again when it came out on DVD because you were getting good at your VHSs. And then again on Blu-ray.
I have it in Blu-ray now. And I feel like I will I will keep that physical media now forever. Because I am so worried with streaming services that they're going to start fucking adjusting and deep fake adjusting it with stuff with AI. Just like, you know how Roald Dahl, like they're basically...
They are changing language.
They're going to be changing some of the verbiage in there so it's not mean-spirited and removing words like you're ugly, you are fat, which is some of the language the mean kids or the bad characters use.
Yeah.
But then... The whole premise behind that in the Roald Dahl books is they use this negative language, and what ends up happening? Bad stuff happens to them because they're bad people.
Yeah.
Well, if you remove that language, it loses the teeth of it.
Changes the plot.
And it's censorship, right?
Just leave it alone.
And just leave it be, right? Yeah. And I feel like I'm worried that that's going to start happening to movies.
Well, okay, you raise a really good point. Let's start there.
It's not going to be like when you watch a Disney movie and they've got the disclaimer and they say, you know, there's some verbiage here that was inappropriate based on the time.
Yeah.
Eventually, they're just going to go, fuck it, and they're going to use AI to fucking just take it out.
Physical media. Let's start there. That's an old way of making movies. Physical media has practically gone the way of the buffalo.
Like, you're talking about film versus digital?
I'm talking about actual physical media. We don't live in a world anymore where physical media has a push anymore because of streaming. Right. You can still buy it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
it's still out there. It's still in the ether. You can still collect it. But they're not printing it in the mass droves that they were before. You don't see the next wave of Blu-ray player coming out.
It's not required. Well, Samsung's, I'll give you an example. I mean, the largest Blu-ray manufacturer in the world stopped making them in 2018.
There you go. Right.
They were like, fuck it. We're not making these anymore.
But it's out of the business model. Right. It's like watching vinyl. Like, we're going to watch DVD come back in 30, 40 years because we're watching vinyl come back right now, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Vinyl's different, though, right? Because there's a nostalgia with that. Well, and so I would...
will be with DVDs. The whole going to Blockbuster.
Behind the scenes, special feature shit. Like, the stuff that's...
I guess so, but I don't consider vinyl analogous to Blu-ray. I would consider vinyl analogous to film, like a 35...
Sure.
Real film. Yeah. That's analogous to that, right? I feel, you know, that's just my two cents on it. The CD is more analogous to the DVD or the Blu-ray in that respect.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you
apples
went from
to apples
pure analog to physical digital media to now streaming digital, right? To, you know,
well,
and I think that's kind of the difference.
So much so that Bob Iger said in his fucking earnings call this last week that physical media is on his mind, right? There's something on the table that they're not getting. Financially, creatively, fan-based, whatever, fan service, whatever you want to call it. But there's something there, and I think there should be a push to bring it back because it is what Rob enjoys buying. It is one of my...
It's a collectible.
It's tangible.
I used to have a wall-filled bookshelves with VHSs and DVDs.
Like, I would purposely spend an extra $5 when a Blu-ray came out to get the Steelbox edition or make sure I got the Steelbox version of it. And here's the thing, right? Like, I always hear people complain. They're like, oh, my God, fucking, I got to have a Spotify account, and I got to have Netflix and maybe another streaming service, and I can't believe I'm spending, like, $46 a month. And I'm like, get fucked. I want you to go back 20 years ago to the early 2000s when you were maybe in your 20s, and you would buy 3 or 4 CDs a month, maybe even 2 CDs a month. Each one was 20, 25 bucks. You'd go to Blockbuster once or twice a week, or at least once a week. Or
$7-$8 cost for
a
movie.
Five, 12. $6. Right?
I used to go along the wall of the previously
viewed. $10.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I mean, we're movie fans in this room, but I know for a fact that regular people that just liked watching movies still fucking did all of that stuff all the fucking time. I worked at Future Shop in the early 2000s. Like when a new movie came out, we would literally sell $30,000 of a fucking Harry Potter DVD in one fucking day.
That's insane. But I believe it.
I totally believe it.
Like, I used to enjoy it when a new thing came out. I'd know it was coming out, and I'd be waiting for it.
It's tactile. It smells. Yeah. It's got a booklet.
You push it in the machine.
You can see everybody's name on the back. Like, you've got...
But the whole point I'm trying to get at is I laugh, and people are just like... And that goes back to the Iger thing, right? Is that there's not as much revenue coming in to create this huge library of content that's being produced now. I don't even know how it's all fucking... how it all fucking works anymore, because I just don't think the subscription brings in enough money anymore.
Yeah, it's an unknown entity. I've tried to figure it out.
We'll figure it out soon, I guess.
Yeah,
we'll see who crashes
first. Like, is there going to be, like, is there, you know what I mean? But I guess it's kind of like with streaming, like, you know, artists don't make as much money off of Spotify as they did off album sales. But that's why when you go see a band now, it's $300 or $400. And people are like, oh my God, I can't believe that. I'm like, well, like, that's just the fucking way it is. Like,
you either buy their shit, if you stream it, then...
Rock stars can't afford fucking private jets off fucking Spotify streams.
No.
Unless they're fucking Ed Sheeran with like 2.1 billion listens.
And if you're butthurt about
or
that...
Or Drake.
Buy the album on iTunes then, so that more money goes to the artist instead of restreaming it for as many times. Well, I can go down that rabbit hole forever.
I don't even know if Apple gives that much, though.
No, they don't. But I don't even...
Yeah,
like,
that's
I've
true.
Bought a few albums on... like iTunes, just because, like, really like the artist, but I'm like, I don't even know if they get like most of this, or it's not like buying the CD, you know, like $3.
I haven't bought CDs since I was selling audio video, and I actually, like, I would actually play the CD because it sounded that much fucking better than streaming it.
Okay.
But then you can just stream Tidal if you want that.
Let's kick through this list here.
Sorry, man. I know
that's okay. That's fine. No, we started with DVDs. It's fine. I get it.
But I agree. Physical media, there's something about it.
It's a zhuzh.
You also get the special features, motherfucker.
You do. Listen to ours. We got tons of them.
Commentary tracks is what I miss. I do miss watching a movie with them talking about it over top.
My favorite commentary track is watch Fight Club with the commentary track.
Dude,
it's so good.
Okay, so first item, music videos featuring the movie. One of the cheesiest promotional methods,
I think. Fucking lame.
Really?
I don't fucking miss this at all.
I fucking love it. I you know what? I don't miss it in the sense that I want to see it and I want it back because where are we going
to
find it?
Do you subscribe to Much Music on your cable package?
That's the problem, right? Is that where are we going to watch it? But I loved it. I miss it just in a nostalgic way.
Maybe it's just like the example they gave is with Bowie and the Labyrinth. It's so cheese dick. Well, with like the little fucking Muppet goblins and stuff in the music video.
Let me change your mind on some of this. All right. So first one that I super miss is Ninja Rap, Vanilla Ice, TMNT. The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That music video has the turtles in it, guys. Like, it's the Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go. Like,
I always thought that was cheese dick as could be.
Yeah, but cheese dick can still be fun.
You're also like 4-5 years younger than me.
That's true.
Or 4 years younger than me.
I'm just younger at heart.
I don't know. No, but you know what? I think by the time that came out, I was at a time in my life where I was like, okay, like, I like the movie, but this is cheese dick. And you were like probably like 8, and you're like, this is the coolest thing ever. I love it.
It really actually was. That's a very Or like, all right, the Bat Dance from Batman, Prince.
It was horrible.
No, it's not.
Fucking horrible. even Prince's album, like his Batman album, it's fucking sucks. I remember I bought it and I was like, all right, and I was like expecting it to be all like Danny Elfman, and it's fucking like Prince. Like, there's literally like
it's unapologetically Prince.
Like, the only song that I liked was the song that they play when they go through the art gallery and they're fucking with all the art.
Gentlemen, play some music.
And the guy's got the fucking ghetto blaster. Yeah. And they're wearing those purple, like jump jackets.
Lawrence?
Yeah.
So I don't like the...
Do you like Rob too, Dan? You don't like...
Yeah, no, I hate all of these.
Really? Yeah, okay, I've also got Gangster's Paradise. With Coolio in school with Michelle Pfeiffer and like, you know, that.
I'll give you that because I like that song.
That, like, it adds, it gives it another fun fucking level. It might not be an.
No, it's fucking bullshit marketing. Fuck this.
Oh, I don't deny that.
The movie should stand on its own accolades and doesn't need a fucking tie-in with a fucking music video.
But I'm of the
Get
music.
Get fucked.
I'm of the music generation. The music video generation.
Oh, so I'm not?
Well, I'm not saying you're not. Like, I know you. I know you were long born before music hit. What was it? TV video killed the radio star was the first music video ever made. You were well in your fifth year.
Well, dude, we're all three of us are right in that era where we watch music videos. Like I remember coming home from school and watching like the Much Music Top 10. Right, like I loved watching music
just
videos.
Just didn't like you guys.
But I just think I've always thought that this was kind of a cheesy tie-in.
I used to like Pop Up Video.
Pop Up Video.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Dan, did you like any of these at all?
I don't like.
Do you have a better example than the David Bowie one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or Dangerous Minds?
The Men in Black one, where you do the alien dance.
Get
with
the
Will
fuck
Smith
out of here.
With the inserted aliens in the video.
Like,
I ate this shit up.
I loved the song
individually, and I like the movie individually.
Just
the fact
slide
that they're together.
Just slide with me.
It's kind of like you know how Family Guy makes fun of Will Smith. It's like with Will Smith with his PG lyrics is I take a woman out for dinner.
It's very PG.
Woohoo! I was pull her chair out and open the door for her.
Yeah, I know that joke plays. No, that's really all I got from some of
like
my
that
favorites.
Men in Black tie-in is fucking lame.
Oh, hey,
dude, that song sucks.
I'm not saying the song is great. I just appreciate cheese dick.
Like that's
humor.
One of those things I turned a blind eye on because I like Will Smith, and I was like, I'm gonna turn a blind eye on this shit because it's fucking embarrassing.
No, I like the song. I like the song. You're wrong.
No, that video is more embarrassing than fucking Will Smith slapping Chris Rock.
All right. Oof. All right. Let's move on.
Have you seen the new Chris Rock stand up?
No.
Fucking hate, like, angry charge last 10 minutes? Holy shit.
They actually had to edit it a couple times because he stepped on jokes. He was so angry.
Wow.
Yeah, they've cut stuff out since the rewatch is aired. Moving on. Great opening credits. We were talking about this before, Rob. You mentioned.
I love this and hate this.
You know what?
But I think the key is they have to be great.
They do. And there is a gimmick to using them. And
like Hitchcock good.
Hitchcock good.
James Bond.
James Bond good.
I need to see that broccoli name come up.
Yeah. I just want the naked silhouette girls.
Well, and like they all.
Can't do that nowadays. Like is that going to be the next one?
I don't know. Maybe.
What were we talking about? Catch Me If You Can, I think, was one.
Catch Me If You Can definitely has a great intro.
Yeah.
But they have that unique song that they wrote. And And I think because you
did
know...
Did they release it as well as a tie-in for a song?
With a music video? They absolutely fucking did not.
No. Spielberg would
never... That's why I never heard of it.
Spielberg would never succumb to that bullshit. He's above that. No, I just think it was fun because it is part of the movie, right? It is... It's your first shot. It's your first sequence. It is there. And to just have like a title credit role is boring to me. I don't know. Dan, what
yeah,
are your...
Yeah, no, I like it. I like a cold open, a shortish cold open that doesn't have anything... that necessarily have to have anything to do with the rest of the movie, then a nice, reasonably short, like a Bond, like the Bond intro.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be epic. Just
step into your movie. But, like, or step into your movie. As a general rule, I don't like them.
Okay.
No.
No.
Like, you know, I've got a young daughter, and
here we go.
We'll watch like a Pixar movie or like a newer Disney movie, and it usually goes kind of right into the movie. And then sometimes she'll be like, oh, I'll be like, hey, you want to watch Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty or Pinocchio or one of those older ones?
Go way back.
And we start watching it, and they've got like those really boring opening credits where they just flash people's names, and they've got like some melodic song. And she like looks at me like, what the fuck is going on? When the fuck does the movie start? And I literally have
Daddy,
to fast forward it.
Daddy, can you fast forward the bullshit?
Where's
Daddy?
The skip intro button?
But those are called... shitty opening credits, but that's just the way the credits were because they didn't have the credits after the movie back then.
Well, yeah,
there was a rule that they had to put these people's names on the screen.
Like, union-based rules,
union-based rules. So that was why they were there in the first place. I guess the rules changed and they just dumped them all to the end eventually.
Well, and that's the sign of the times, right? Where like you're right, like a Marvel movie. Never mind the end credit sequence. We can talk about that all on its own. Yeah. But the amount of CGI engineers that are listed on these movies now. We're making small cities in the end credit trailer.
Well, you'll look at the movie and you'll pause it and go, oh, there's 20 minutes left of the movie. So, you know, there's actually 6 minutes left of the movie.
For sure.
Because the trailers are fucking 14 minutes long.
I'm
going to
play
like four songs.
I really like, you know, I like a cold open. You can make a good mention there. Like a cold open that's part of the scene and then cut two trailers quickly. Good example is Dawn of the Dead, the Zack Snyder version.
Oh, yeah.
Right where it happens. Mm-hmm. And then when the zombie apocalypse breaks, it's Johnny Cash. Yeah. And you're just like, this is fucking cool, right? And like some action of the movie even happening in the credit sequence, that's all I need. Like some interesting aspect, either it be
Inside Man has really good opening credits.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, like
because they're panning through the city landscape.
Something that's
interesting. And they're tying in the things into the actual buildings, and then they cut down to the actual opening scene of the movie.
It's the graphic design element normally of the film, right?
Yeah.
We know that none of the real shots that were captured on set are going to be in it unless someone's being really fun with it. So, like, yeah, take a minute and just have some fucking fun.
But I love a movie that it starts with such a fucking epic opening scene and that maybe plays for, you know, 5 to 12 minutes and then you've got a short credit sequence that basically pans in.
Yeah.
Dark Knight is probably the number one example of, like, an amazing start to something,
but then they
show some credits afterwards and then they move into the broader movie.
Although that is possibly one of the best movies ever made.
I would say so.
I would agree.
Like the fact that they introduce, like they, instead of, they're like, well, we're not going to give you a trailer teaser. We're just going to give you the opening sequence and you can watch it 19 fucking times. Right?
I didn't watch any trailers or anything going into it. And I went and saw it at an IMAX and it was one of my first IMAX experiences.
Nice.
And then when the opening scene and you're just on that helicopter and it just goes over the city, my stomach dropped out and I'm like, fucking love this movie.
Yeah.
And nothing had happened yet.
Well, and that's ballsy too to put your opening sequence as your trailer. Like where you don't splice and create and reimagine the movie so that you can confuse your audience because that's Batman. That's a big fucking deal. For him to just drop an opening sequence as a trailer, that's a big dick.
I also love that movie too, because that was one of the first IMAX related movies where they're changing the aspect ratio throughout the film from 16:9 to the wider 2.23:1 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's
right. So you've got a more cinematic scene when you require it, but then we're going to go up tighter when it's more of a dialogue.
Yeah,
close up.
I never knew they did that, but that would also probably make sense. Like why I was so immersed in it because it cut down.
He brings you in.
Yeah,
and he shoots. I watched a video on Studio Binder. Shout out to Studio Binder, best fucking YouTube channel I'm watching right now. They use examples of how movies were made to sell their software, and they make shorts on them.
Right.
It's fucking cool. They interview Nolan, and the way you see his camera work, like Pacino on Insomnia, the camera's right here.
Like, yeah. it's invasive to the actor, where a lot of people shoot out so far. What you're talking about is when he does those close-ups and those dialogue shots, you're in the fucking camera.
And speaking of physical media, Nolan doesn't shoot digital.
No,
film. He still shoots on fucking
IMAX
film.
Fucking film. That's expensive.
But it's Nolan, though, right? Like, he's got an unlimited budget behind him now.
So do we want some fun opening credits to come back, or just leave it the way of the Buffalo?
I mean, I think it fits a certain movie, like Catch Me If You Can. So, like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s? That fits.
I think it
was of an era, for sure.
Yes.
But again, it's because I think we know the movie is kind of taking place in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of, it's like a callback to that era where they would have had that.
The graphic design of it is very of the 60s. The music, it's to set you in the era.
Yeah. Jordan Peele does a little bit longer credits as well too, right?
He does.
But he's kind of trying to play on that Hitchcockian kind of thing too.
Oh, and it works.
I will put my cinema knowledge on record here and state that he's the next Hitchcock, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know about Nope. Nope was a little bit weird.
But not all of Hitchcock's were fucking bangers, right?
No, they weren't. Yeah. It's true.
You know, like, but most of them were made with amazing film work and really solid, like, zhuzh is the best way I can
And it's funny
it.
How
like,
M. Night Shyamalan was
going to be the next,
Hitchcock, he would even do his own cameos and stuff like that, but he's just kind of, he fell flat and he's so hit and miss.
No, Jordan is the shit. All right, moving on. Opening credits to...
What was the example they gave?
They gave Peter O'Toole, Peter Sellers, Woody Allen. What's New Pussycat was the example they gave, which is pretty ballsy for sitting behind a Woody Allen these days. But
yeah.
Hand-drawn animation. I fucking missed the shit out of this.
Me too.
I love knowing that somebody sat there cell after cell after cell and did their best fucking work they possibly could so that it looked like it wasn't done on a cell.
Yeah, I think they should, like, again, it's of the era, right? But, like, I still think, like, a good hand-drawn cartoon movie is better.
Yeah.
Some of the CGI stuff's great, but, like, it's...
Unreal Engine and what they can do these days with the Super Mario trailer that just came out the other day. Like, it looks so fucking beautiful.
Well, but even here's the thing. Like, I watched all four Toy Stories, as an example, in over one weekend, right? A couple months ago when Lucy was sick. And when you see the difference between Toy Story 1 to 4, holy fuck, do you have an appreciation for how much better that computer-generated animation. And when we say computer-generated, you still have an artist rendering.
Totally.
It's basically they're doing touch points at different points, and then AI machine learning is filling that in and getting better and better. I mean, I think there's something to be said about this, but holy fuck, you want to talk about a tedious... like zero ROI kind of feel.
Yeah.
Right. But don't get me wrong. I like it. Right. Like, I'm a big Ralph Boschke fan.
Okay.
Right. But again, a lot of times they would do where they would actually film a scene and then they would draw over it afterwards. Right.
Yeah.
And that was cutting edge for the late 70s, like the Lord of the Rings movie or the Hobbit
movie. That filling the negative space in with a matte painting or something, right? Or some sort of drawn-in aspect, yeah.
Well, or they would have a fight scene with two humans, and what they would do is they would just have, like, simple cloaks on, and they'd have wooden swords.
Like Alice in Wonderland was done like that, I think.
There, you know, and speaking of, a lot of those background film stills were recycled. Like, Alice in Wonderland can also be seen in, I think, The Jungle Book is one.
No. It's Jungle Book and Winnie the Pooh.
Thank you. There's you're like, wait a minute, I've seen those backgrounds before.
Yeah.
Walt Disney wasn't a schlup, man.
No, he wasn't. And then you're talking about return on investment. It's like, well, instead of paying animators to make new stills, we can use these as much as we fucking can. If we're going to draw, then...
You know how smart Walt Disney is?
Very
smart.
So
after they opened Walt Disney World or Land or whichever one, I think this was Land first, they would notice if there was grass sections and they noticed people would be cutting across them and there would be a trail, Walt Disney would go, just fucking pave that. Make that a fucking walkway.
It was a natural walkway.
And,
that's cool.
And he would purposely do that. So there was all these like shortcuts everywhere after a while, and it made the park more efficient because of that.
I heard he started the Walt Disney.
Do you know he's still alive, right? They cut off his head and
I knew they froze.
They wheel
him into a conference.
They wheel him around in a baby carriage so he can continue to keep tabs on everything.
Wow.
That's where the idea from Futurama came from.
I heard that he got involved with
the Nazis. Totally.
Yes. Well, but ABC and the Disney show was just to plug Disney World. Like, he got paid to make advertisements because in the front of every Disney Hour episode, he'd be like, "Here's the park I'm building. Here's all the shit." Yeah. And he was like, "Pay me to make a show for you, sure, but I get to plug my park, which is where all the fucking money
goes. I think he always wanted to own ABC too, but I think there was laws in place earlier where a movie studio couldn't own a television studio.
Probably.
And I think that changed, right?
Well, it's definitely changed.
Yeah, the one thing they need to keep consistent, though, in the United States, there's a law that where a movie studio is not allowed to own a movie theater chain.
Yes.
And that, hopefully they never repeal that. Because imagine Disney bought a movie theater chain
and only played
Disney movies. That'd be fucked.
Yeah. Netflix is actually the only company who owns one because they are a streaming service and not a movie studio,
that,
which is a fucking loophole.
I think that's being fought in court right
now. I'm sure it is. I think it should be.
They are a movie company now as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Ryan Reynolds hasn't released a movie in the theater in fucking 5 years.
He doesn't need to.
No, he doesn't, actually.
He can do whatever he wants.
Deadpool will be
the first one since that last
like
Deadpool.
Free Guy, Red Notice, all that Netflix shit that he did.
Sixth Underground.
Yeah. My God, I never even thought of
Daniel's, whatever that diary one or whatever it was called.
Another point I want to make on this.
They're fucking dope.
On the hand-drawn animation. They are great. On the hand-drawn animation. You could buy them. You could go into the Disney store.
Yeah, like buy the cell. It's
and
like,
buy the cell.
I have Itchy's arm.
Right? No. You've got that one flip.
I have Scratchy's penis.
I always thought that was really fucking neat that you got this offshoot byproduct, like physical media, right? Like a collectible. And you don't get that when someone, and yes, to Rob's point, they draw in a program and it's painstaking and it's just like probably flip book.
We're never going to have handmade.
No.
This is never going to happen again. If anything with AI, machine learning and that kind of stuff, this has just gone into fucking overdrive. And
I think this leads into the next subject too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Phil Tippett could have a conversation about this. The guy who lost his job on Jurassic Park to a CGI Tyrannosaurus Rex. Practical effects next on the list. I think we all can agree that as expensive and tedious as it can be, practical effects will never die in my heart.
I think there's always going to be a place for them. And
I think they can work well together.
Together.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
There's something, I said, I can't remember what it was, but there's a couple movies I watched recently, and it was, they used practical effects, and I knew that it was a practical, you could just kind of tell that they'd really built this.
You're not
monster.
In the uncanny valley, right?
Yeah.
You
like,
see a
you
difference.
You knew there was, like, maybe the lighting, whatever, just you could tell it was a practical effect, but behind it over there was CGI stuff going on too, and I'm like, this is what it should be. Like, it just was great.
Yeah, like let's use the Star Wars trilogy as a prime example, right? Of practical effects,
yes. 4, 5, and 6,
of course, right? You know, now if CGI had been better in 1983 when they were making Return of the Jedi,
yeah,
the Rancor would be awesome. And let's be honest, Rancor's cool.
Yeah.
But it looks fucking bad.
Yes.
That does not hold up. Cannot be fixed in the re-releases.
You make a great point because in Boba Fett, he gets a Rancor.
And they did it right.
And they redid it as practical, but they did it right.
But they could afford to do the
practical.
Exactly,
yeah.
Because we have better capability with that type
motion
of robotics
and
all that kind of
the
good
background.
Stuff.
Yeah, totally. The effect. I like the best of both worlds. I don't think one should be traded for the other. Like when you know that Mando's shooting on that big fucking circle screen that they made for the show. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but they're taking Unreal Engine, they're taking the background, and they're shooting it onto the green screen. So the actor has an environment to be in instead of a green screen.
Oh, that's so much. That's got to help the actor so much.
Yeah, but that goes to the next.
It does.
The Matt. So let's
the Matt.
Why
yeah, okay,
why don't
sure.
We
yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
And let's talk about
for
more
sure.
practical effects.
But Grogu, if you want to get into actual arguments on practical effects, it was Werner Herzog, the German director, who in like the first season was like, if you make this CGI, people are going to revolt.
Yeah, but that's Grogu.
I know.
And you can get away with doing it with Grogu, but here, let's debate this, right? What's better, Yoda in 5 and 6 or Yoda in 1, 2, 3?
They are different.
Could you have done practical effects in 1, 2, 3 with Yoda?
No.
No fucking way.
No. Because the world around Yoda is changing, so for them to anchor
in
a practical Yoda.
In 5 and
Yoda,
6, he's basically just old and he's
old
on his last legs.
Not so old.
Too old
I am. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And then
he doesn't have a fucking lightsaber in 5 and 6.
No. But when you see him in 1, 2, and 3, Yeah, the whole movie is now all CGI. There's no practical spaceships. There's no fucking Dijkstra cam. Like, all that's gone in 1, 2,
and 3. The only practical that was still in the first three was droids.
Sure, and those are touch points. Those are interactive, and yeah. I don't think you could ever... Like, R2-D2's never going to be CGI'd. I think that's...
Was BB-8 CGI?
Probably.
I think parts of him were, yeah. But I think parts of it were practical.
I know Bill Hader's the voice of BB-8. He just fucked around with some octaves.
That's funny.
Like 2 weeks before. And
did he make Vin Diesel money like in Guardians?
Who knows? Him and Abrams apparently are friends, and JJ's like, yeah, it's 2 weeks before we go to release.
No, that's great.
Do you want to be BB-8? And then they recorded it.
Too bad JJ didn't do all the fucking three. And we could take away that Ryan Johnson fucking movie.
The example is E.T. I mean, E.T. still fucking stands up to this day. I mean,
although I did watch this, I think, last year at some point.
With the girls?
Does it hold up?
No.
Really?
Well, yeah,
and it's funny because there's a bunch of people saying this is still Spielberg thinks this is his best movie.
It does hold up.
I disagree with Steven.
It was so dated. Like, it was of the time, and it was great, but, like, half the things...
There's
like
a movie...
My kids were like, what's a telephone? Like, what's this? And I'm like, well, back we used to have, like, a phone in our house. And then, so I just kept explaining things, and I was like, it kind of pulled me out of it, and I was like, I don't love it as much as I used to.
Remember we were talking about movies that have been censored and changed?
Yep. Yeah.
So there's a scene in this... where his mom goes to him and she goes, "Oh, you look like you look like you're a terrorist." His costume, and they rechanged
it's
it.
A hard T.
They changed it to, "You look like a hobo."
Huh.
The examples they use for these practical effects ones are American Werewolf in London, which obviously, I mean, watching the change sequence, Bob Baker, Will Baker.
What about The Exorcist?
The Exorcist too.
How about every fucking Nolan movie?
How about Alien, right?
Alien, yeah, for
like,
sure.
You know, you've got all these giant monsters with people playing with all, like it.
Well, think about Aliens. Let's talk about Aliens.
Sure.
Aliens good. Aliens, like, it's fucking better. Cameron took that shit to the next level. He's like, we don't have one fucking xenomorph. We have fucking thousands.
We have a pregnant xenomorph.
And they built that giant fucking mechanical thing to motion. But even when she's in, like, the fucking lifter and stuff like that, like, they've got some stop motion
the
stuff.
The lifter's practical, for fuck's sakes. Like,
the lifter's practical. They used, when the spaceship is coming up to the planet, they use matte paintings with the fucking practical effects in the front. Like, it's fucking on. And that movie holds up, dude.
Oh, Aliens
that is also
fuck.
One of my all-time favorites.
You know what the funny thing is? When Cameron made that, so Terminator, most expensive movie ever made at the time. Aliens, most expensive movie ever made. Yeah. The Abyss, most expensive movie ever made.
Great movie.
Titanic, most expensive movie ever made. Movie. Avatar, most expensive. The guy has made the most expensive movie ever 5 fucking times. Like, that's fucking insane.
Did you hear how
it works, right?
It totally works, man.
Did you hear how he pitched Aliens?
No.
Just walks up to the chalkboard and types Alien and then puts an S at the end and then makes it a dollar sign. He's like, that's my next movie. That was the pitch. And only James Cameron can do that.
Yeah. Well,
you know, like, how are we going to make money on this? Let's make a sequel.
Oh, fuck. It's so good.
Next on the list, Intermission. I can't remember having intermissions as a kid. I mean, I know these are cut into like Lawrence of Arabia.
I've only seen one movie in the theater with an intermission.
Which one was it?
It was Kenneth Branagh's remake of Hamlet.
Sure. 4-hour fucking movie. It makes sense.
When I was a kid and I went to the theater with my parents, there was a movie, intermission in every movie. Like, they just slice into the movie in the middle for like 10 minutes.
This is in England? Sounds like I feel like that's a British sensibility thing.
It's
time for tea.
There was always an intermission, and so there's.
Well, it's kind of. I think it's almost a playback to plays, right? Because you know how, like,
if you
go to the play, if you go to a play, or if you go to, the theater. If you go to the theater or the ballet or the opera,
Why are you saying like that?
I don't know, because it's funny.
Happens every time you hang out with him.
It feels like it's appropriate in this circumstance.
Why are you saying it not like me?
But I think it was considered a faux pas to get up and block.
Oh, yeah,
you know
what
I mean? So I think maybe that's
maybe.
So
stopped when I was like 10 plus.
Like, I feel like that's a proper British sensibility thing.
I agree with you on that, Rob. That's a cultural across the pond.
Manners maketh the man.
Facts.
Very fucking fact. I want that. I almost wanted that tattooed on my arm. I've seen it in, you know, when you get the two tape VHS copies.
Pearl Harbor.
Right? Pearl Harbor. Like, Joe Black was another
one. What's the
Woody
Harrelson one where the Killers one?
Natural Born Killers.
Natural Born Killers, the extended version. Yep, I had that on VHS. It came out two tapes.
But those were, I remember seeing, like, you could see
Lawrence
one.
Lawrence of Arabia is really fucking long, too.
Very fun. Three and a half, almost but four. It's also, Dances with Wolves has an intermission. I know that. The director's cut.
I think the Postman had an intermission.
The Postman is an entire intermission.
The Postman's great.
I wanted to leave.
The Postman is the worst movie ever.
It's so good.
Finally,
so you obviously haven't listened to this. I will reference every time we're talking about like a movie that I hate so much that I want those 2 hours back. I always talk about
his bar.
It's the Postman.
Is the Postman
that scene?
You should rewatch it because I think it'll go.
Oh, really? So the scene where he stops and the little boy has the letter and he stops his horse. And he looks around and it's like cuts to that and he's like, and then he comes back and he grabs the letter out of the boy's hand and then it cuts to like a future and suddenly they've gone from a fucking dystopian post-apocalyptic to like society has rebuilt itself to almost like perfect suburbia 30 years later and they build a statue of that. Fuck that movie.
See how passionate you are about this movie.
Fuck
I
that
you
cheese.
Like it so much more than you're letting on. The passion in his voice when he's talking.
There was
about
no cyborgs in it like in the book.
There was no cyborgs in it.
And if they were, they should have been practical.
Way to bring it back.
Try. Creepy kids movies. I fucking love watching all the movies that creep me out as a kid now and laughing at myself and being like this. The prime example, and it's referenced in this, that's the actual fucking monkey is Return to Oz. They don't make creepy kids movies anymore because they're afraid to fuck the kids up.
Yeah.
And the parents are so afraid of what can change a kid's perception, which I now know from watching so much fucking cinema. I'm like, my God, some of the things I watched when I was a kid,
I think
I shouldn't
it's a byproduct of Bulldozer and Helicopter Parents.
You think that's what's changed?
That is completely what has happened because people are so worried about putting their children under any distress or, oh my God, I'm gonna remove every fucking barrier for my child so they don't have to experience any hardship or any of that kind of stuff. I think that's a big part of it.
We let our kids watch Jaws last summer.
I commend you for
I let my 3-year-old watch Jurassic fucking Park.
It was dinosaurs.
It's a pretty fucking freaky movie.
How old do you say?
3.
Yeah, that's
There's a difference though between
That's really it. Like they're not gonna get scared over the
There was a couple of parts where she was like a little bit freaked out, but then she was like, "Wait, but it's just a dinosaur."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Okay."
But these movies, The Secret of Nim, Labyrinth, and Return to Oz.
Secret of Nymph.
Nymph, thank you. All are like G-rated horror movies. They're not even like with today's society. If you were to take any of these creepy aspects, like Return to Oz, she trades her head. She takes off her head and puts on a new head.
Return to Oz is pretty. Fucking out there. Dude.
It's so out there. But if you were to try to do that now, I'm not saying it would fly or should it fly. But there was a part where they were like, it's okay to fuck the kids up, right? And I think those movies, I'm not a parent, so I don't have a dog in the race.
It's about perspective, though, right? Like, let's look at Labyrinth, right? Like, the whole feel of Labyrinth isn't, like, super scary, but there's moments in it to create a contrast, right? It's kind of like the Neverending Story, right? The scene where you've got the wolf, like when Lucy sees that, she gets a little bit freaked out by that, and she's sad with the in the swamp.
But the overall story
is she thinks it's fantastic, right? Because right after that scene, you have fucking Valcor comes in, you're like, holy fuck, and it's uplifting again. So I think it's more about the contrast. See your nymph, I fucking love that movie as a kid.
I think it's more about how they consume the media right now. Like when we was watching these movies, we had them on VHS or something, and we were watching them at home.
Mm-hmm.
On the but now they're constantly streaming everything all the time. So my kids don't watch movies unless we all make them sit down and watch a movie. They're just constantly watching on YouTube and shit. So like they're never going to watch something like this. Whereas before, when I was a kid growing up, it was like, oh, the Labyrinth movies, the kids movies coming out.
And I think because we're music video kids, right? And we're 90s movies kids predominantly. This is something that we miss, but
I don't miss it.
You know,
I didn't like them that much.
No,
no, I don't like any of those movies.
Tell you the truth, I don't miss them. I just think they're fun. Right, like yeah. to go back to them and revisit them, and to compare and contrast. Am I as scared as I was before, or have I changed?
I fucking love these creepy as fuck 80 movies. I love them. I love them.
It's hard genre for sure.
Yeah,
but loved it.
Like the what was like even Fraggle Rock for a TV show was kind of creepy.
I did love Fraggle Rock.
What about Dark Crystal?
Oh fuck, there's other shit too that's on the tip of my tongue.
One movie I like to watch with Lucy lots is The Last Unicorn.
Yes.
And there's some creepy shit in there.
What about, it's an animated kids movie. It's not The Hobbit, but it's done by the same, fuck, what was it? I can't remember. Well, Little Monsters comes to mind, though. I mean, not creepy, monster under the bed, right? Mm. Not something you do now because you don't want to upset little Jimmy and little Susie. Again, I'm not a parent. So I'm speaking.
My dad let me watch a lot of movies earlier than I probably should have.
Yeah.
But and I mean, I think I'm you know, there's going to be some people listening to this and they're going to be like, you let your 3.5-year-old watch Jurassic Park? I'm like, yeah, but that's my decision, right? Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And it's not like she's watching her by herself. I'm there, so I can.
This isn't Seven. This isn't a terrorist. This isn't Zero Dark Thirty. You're not sending her down this rabbit hole of like depression and darkness and comparable situations
Absolutely.
To real life.
100%.
It's a dinosaur. It's not real. We know that.
I wasn't allowed.
Well,
to
it was real.
Sorry.
You're gonna become a creationist now? God put these bones here to test our faith.
Next on the list, I know they still make them, but they don't make them like they used
they
to.
They don't.
Romantic comedies.
Rom-coms, like...
Those are ours.
The last great kind of like batch of them kind of was like the late 2000s. Like,
yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I used to love a rom-com, but then the whole concept of like just keep pestering the girl until she gives in kind of was like, it's not really the right message.
It does have a method. It has has a recipe, right?
For sure, and they're all the same. And
very much so. I mean, I
understand the guise of where you're coming with this, but I think it was more. I think the underlying thing was basically like be persistent and keep trying. And
oh, for sure. No, I get it.
But you know, and I get where it can come from. I didn't take no for an answer to the point where I was creepy to the point of like rape, like rapiness. But like I there's a fine line in there
for sure.
But yeah,
and I think that's the thing. Like these old rom coms, they ran it pretty good, but like they failed because everything new is going to be trying to be edgier, and so the newer stuff, in my opinion, probably crossed the line a few times. Like I don't know, like they just fell off the map.
You think newer romantic comedies crossed the line more than older ones?
So, yeah,
older ones I think were more endearing. We're more about like guy meets like I think it
always has to be about rich people.
Yeah.
Middle class to rich people.
For sure. And either both of them or one of them have recently suffered a heartbreak, right? Mm-hmm. So the rebound's always involved.
Totally.
Or the distance of I've been hurt too much and you've got to, I'm putting up barriers, right? Like
I think that's the thing. They made like 20 amazing ones and that's it. We'll just go back to those ones. We'll rewatch them.
Well, I think there's 20 like in a period between say like the 90s to the early to late 2000s.
Yeah.
But dude, rom-coms, this is the most classic Hollywood movie going back to the 50s.
Oh, the meet rom-com. Cute, the
every big actor that we think of from the 50s and the 60s, most of them are because they were in rom-coms.
Jack Lemmon, Marilyn Monroe, Tony Curtis, Some Like It Hot. Like late 50s, early 60s, about two guys dressing up as women, dressing up in drag, trying to impress Marilyn Monroe on a singing tour that they hop on a train and travel around America on.
Yeah.
It is as romantic comedy as you can get.
It's a love triangle.
Yeah.
The classic love triangle.
And when, you know, one of them's out of drag, when one of them's in drag, like it's so funny.
No, I get that people like them. I guess there are some really good ones, but they're not really for me.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I've never seen it.
Hitch. Like these are the
Hitch was awful.
Hitch is fucking terrible.
I don't know. I kind of like Hitch. I still have a soft spot for Will. I'm
he's got better movies.
I know.
Yeah, like I can name like six that are better than
I
that.
Think Hitch
I
is
name 10.
I think
Wild
Hitch
Wild
is
West.
I was being nice. Wild West is even better than Hitch.
No, I think that the pickup artist
Kenneth Branagh is a great bad guy in that.
He's a fantastic bad guy in that.
That movie's insane.
Bad guy with no legs.
What?
That movie's insane. Like it's just no. I could talk for hours on that movie. Well.
I used to really like the Wild Wild West TV show. I used to watch it as a kid, and I was always thought it was so cool with the caboose, with like their cool like mm-hmm. fucking hangout, and they were like, you know.
moving on. I didn't have this as a kid. Black and white.
No.
I mean, when the Hamlet, the recent.
I had
Hamlet,
a black and white TV in my house when I was a little kid.
The recent.
But
Hamlet,
we had a color and a black and white.
Yeah.
The recent Hamlet picture that Joel Cohen did, that was black and white. Like the Zack Snyder 4.5 hour Justice League cut, they redid in black and white. I mean, it's a technique, but I don't.
It's a technique, and it can be used in certain circumstances.
Like Sin City was amazing.
Yes,
but it wasn't black and white fully.
Well,
yeah,
they accentuated scenes with color.
They did, like yellow blood.
So is that black and white? Black and white?
I think. I would classify Sin City as a black and white movie.
Yeah, I would too. I can't plead the fifth on that. I mean, black and white was because you didn't have the option of color.
You couldn't do it, yeah.
Right. So when you do it now, it's a throwback. But I don't miss black and white if I have color.
No.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Do you like colorized black and white?
No.
Oh, when they take shit like.
I like it when they take like really old movie videos from like the 19 teens and stuff and add a little bit of color, and you're kind of like, and it adds context when you're like,
I watched a World I watched a World War II
or
documentary.
World War II thing that they colorized.
Yeah, I watched a documentary and then you're like, holy shit. Like blood looks a lot different in color, right?
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
It changes
it's
perspective.
Not just, it doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, we can kick this one in the butt. Matte paintings, as you'd mentioned earlier.
This is coming back.
It
Mando.
It's part like, of storyboarding. It's part of being really fucking good at special effects and building a world and tricking the mind.
Well, think about Star Wars, right? And I think about that scene where they're coming into the Death Star, and there's a scene where you see like all those fucking stormtroopers lined up.
Yeah, it looks like 500 of them.
That was hand painted.
Yeah, and there's maybe like 15 of them there with the other some odd are all painted on.
Yeah,
and like you watch them paint it, and they get all fucking like.
I don't like the Mary Poppins example.
No, it's a bad. It's just a blue screen. It's a blue screen on an old film.
But I think Mando, because they've got like those digital screens that they play different videos in behind, is like it's
the matte painting.
It's like the new tech version of matte painting.
Totally, totally.
As opposed to doing a green screen, which sometimes you just know it's fake.
Well, and like because the cameras have changed, I feel the cameras were the biggest limiter, right? Like if you were trying to do a matte painting on today's cameras, you could really fucking hide it and make it look super cool. But back then, you had to really stretch the creativity to make it so that we didn't see it. And that, to your comment, Dan, like the best of both worlds sometimes. Like matte paintings, when you do them and you can use them and you do them right, who fucking cares that it wasn't done in a fucking, you know, in a Unreal Engine?
Right. Just make it look the best you can, right? Like use the best available technology that works.
Well, and that's the beauty of film, right? It's about tricking the audience into perceiving that they are where they need to be.
The warehouse scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark is a matte painting in the end of the original when they lock the Ark up and they pull that big shot back and it's like you see the long where I didn't know that. That's see, and that's what's neat about it. If you can't fucking tell, who fucking cares? Yeah, it's just the time and effort, I think. It's the money. It's always the money.
Yeah, it's the background stuff. Like, I don't care. I'm watching a movie. Just make it look good.
Well, it's like how Nolan, like in the new Oppenheimer movie, he figured out a way without using CGA to mimic a nuclear explosion.
He did it in camera. Everything he does, he says, I want it in camera. I don't want to make it outside of camera.
He's like, I'm going to try to do it. And if I absolutely cannot do it, then we'll do CGI, but that'll be like the last option.
Wow.
And he's using miniatures. Like he uses a small Batmobile for his own.
Dude, they built a giant fucking scene for fucking Inception that fucking rotated around for the scene.
For the whole way, yeah.
What the fuck?
He planted the corn in Interstellar and then sold the corn that paid for the scene when they drive through the corn. He bought the plane in Tenet that runs into the fucking warehouse because it was cheaper to buy a plane and blow it up than it was to do it in
CGI. Well, how about in Dark
CGI?
Knight? They were actually blowing up a fucking old hospital in the U.S.
Yeah, that was a real
sequence. And he said, we'll cover part of the demolition cost, but you have to do it when we want to do it, and I need it for this scene. Like, what the fuck?
That's old school film.
Or the opening scene of Inception where like all the water bursts in. they actually had giant water tanks full and bursted water through to actually film that scene. Like, that's so fucking dope.
Yeah. All right, let's close this list out. And I don't know any examples off the top of my head for this one, but I do understand the argument behind it. Lastly, it's good plots that ignore plot holes. And in the article, listener, it states that it's just letting the character commit to an idea that's what the character would do, instead of going, well, that's not what I would do. That's not how I would play it. That doesn't make sense in real life. We create plot holes, I think, more often than not because of our use of fucking social media, because you can pick apart a thing.
Yeah.
Instead of just letting the character make that decision and be like, I'm in their world, that's their decision, fuck the plot hole that it doesn't
make sense. You also cannot always put your perception of our universe into the perception of their universe, because their universe isn't necessarily our universe.
100%.
Right?
But there are certain movies where there's plot holes the size of a planet.
100%.
Like, why the fuck?
Yes, to your point, yes.
I think that there's so many fucking movies.
No, that movie was great.
I think there's so many fucking movies made now that it's not like it was in the 70s or the 80s or the 60s where, you know, maybe 500 scripts came, but only 3 movies out of those 500 got made.
Oh,
now, out of those 500 scripts, 200 movies can get made because of the democratization of the film industry.
Great point.
And I think what ends up happening is there's so many movies and you're like, okay, this has a lot of potential. And then you're like, this story fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that got filtered down a lot more when in the older studio production system because it was so expensive to make a movie.
Yeah. No, it's watered down now, right?
There's, to a degree.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. I just, like, when I rely on a good filmmaker. Budget, not part of the equation. If you can take me out of my fucking couch and put me into your world, I can let the characters make dumb decisions. Yeah. I can let go and be like, let's just suspend disbelief. But now everybody with a cell phone's got the ability to like dissect and then en masse, we hear it, right? I mean, I wouldn't have caught the fucking cup in Game of Thrones if nobody'd mentioned it because I'm so in the fucking story. But you know, and that's not a plot hole as much as it's bad
editing. About the Starbucks cup.
But like, just the things that we're talking about where plot holes are so obvious that they take
that's
you out of.
That's not a plot hole.
It's a bad example.
That's a small mistake.
Yeah. But
and what I'm saying, that's an example of where I'm glad they can alter something in post-production after it's originally been released. Scrub that shit. That's okay.
Totally. What I mean is that I didn't notice
Don't change Hobo to Terrorist or Terrorist to Hobo.
I didn't notice it because I'm allowing myself to be a part of the world of
Game
of Thrones.
In. I want to be drawn in. It's the same with Babylon, actually. I was watching that movie, and I was in the movie. But then a couple times whilst they were filming, I was watching this orgy scene, and I'm like, can I imagine being on set for this day? Because it's just like, okay, there's all these people dancing and fucking and pissing on each other. And then I just imagine in the background, cut. Reset, and then all these people like shuffle around. I'm like, and then I took me out of the movie for a bit, but it just went through my brain. I was like, well, that would be crazy.
I agree too, but then you have to tell yourself, well, maybe it did happen once.
Well, I'm sure it
and this is what it's based on,
for sure,
right?
I'm sure it happened, but I got whilst I was watching that, I was like, I just had a moment in my head where I'm like, imagine being like the extra, like the fifth.
You like, felt like the grip.
The third guy on the back left. You know you're only going to be in the scene for like maybe 30 seconds, but you've got to be there all day with your junk out, dancing around, cut, stand around, have a sandwich, go back, action.
Sure.
Because you didn't get that in one take.
No, you did not.
And so I'm like, it was a good scene and I was in it, but then I was out of it, but then I was back in it again.
Yeah, no, I think come with technology, with the saturation of the film market, like, you know, we have more. So now that we have more to pick apart. We have more to notice.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah, you're totally right. Like, films were made on such a gamble because such big stories were being told. Like, okay, Fight Club, for an example. Why don't you just go get some fucking help? When you start to realize that you're creating this Project Mayhem, right? And you're really suffering from, like, the reason you're suffering from this sleep situation is because you're becoming this other character that you don't know you're being a part of.
Yeah.
Anybody could be like, go see a fucking therapist already. But that takes you out of the movie, right?
Yeah.
That could be a plot hole, but at the same time, it's what the character's experiencing and he's making his decisions because he doesn't know. And if you know, you have to wait till he finds out so that you both come out the movie the same way. You can do that all day long with anything, but the 90s just had a fucking risk to it. I don't think that risk is there anymore. And with that risk comes...
Well, I think also one of the things I wrote down on my list here is that there was no cell phones back in these. And like so many of my favorite movies of all time would be over in like 11 minutes when the lead character just phoned somebody and said, this is happening, and then boom.
That's a valid point, right?
Yeah.
Like even think about like speed, right?
Yeah.
Like he has like this block of a fucking cell phone, right?
Yeah. Like it.
That's true.
It's just like I like the fact that they have to go across the town, all these epic journeys that would just wouldn't happen. Or you like, or they can just call up Google, like, okay, we're stuck. We've got to go here. No, okay, just Google Maps.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go this way.
Yeah. You were reliant on your skill set as opposed to technology. That's
there is some good TV shows now, though, that will tie that in properly with the cell phone and that, fuck, I lost my cell phone in this scenario and I can't get another one, or I got to go borrow one or steal one from somebody, or they'll use looking something online
it's part
to
of
help
the mechanic.
Them with something
yeah.
as to move the plot line along.
Yeah.
Which you're like, okay, that's realistic because that's what I would do in that situation.
Yeah, well, they've caught up now, I think. But there was a period in the mid-2000s where they were still making movies where as if nobody had a cell phone. Yeah. And
but that's also how you age movies, is now you age movies by looking. Always used to be the car with me, and that I still use that. But now a lot of times it's like, now I can pinpoint and go, oh, right, this was 2002 based on that phone.
Yep.
And it's weird because you know exactly when a movie was made in 2007 and you know when a movie was made in 2009 because flip phone, iPhone, flip phone, iPhone.
How about this one? How about knowing that the bad guy is the bad guy based on the cell phone that they're using, because Apple will not let a bad guy have an Apple phone.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So you know right off the hop, because Apple's finally admitted that that's why no heavies, no bad guys, no heels have an iPhone in their in their shot.
Cool.
Shauna does it all the time now. She's like, I don't see an iPhone. They must be a bad person. Possibly. Just watch. All right, moving on. As I mentioned,
Apple, you're lame. You're fucking lame.
15 acting duos.
You know, the funny thing is they're arguably the most fascist ecosystem out there, yet they won't allow their phone to be used by a bad guy. Weird.
Odd. Wow. So.
I said it.
And now we're canceled.
Not on Spotify.
Next segment. Sometimes when two actors team up for the first time, they end up making fucking gold happen. And then they continue to do it, and it just makes us happy. And then that's the selling feature, right? Like Martin Scorsese working with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, right? And just seeing them do their shit. We'll ask Dan first. Who's your favorite duo to see on
my
screen?
Favorite duo. Oof. Favorite's probably Brad Pitt and Clooney. I just love the Ocean's 11 so much. I don't know. And they're so pretty.
Like, they are pretty.
Like, they just got so much charisma. And the rest of the cast as well doesn't hurt. But those two have done a couple movies together.
Don Cheadle doesn't do it for you?
Not in the same way.
The guy who plays the little...
Yeah, I know who you mean.
The gymnast?
Yeah.
Not your favorite character?
Contortionist.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just... It's...
Hatchet Man. Or not a Hatchet Man, something man.
Grease Man.
Grease Man, that's it.
Yeah.
I feel they play really well together.
I love that Brad Pitt is eating in almost every fucking scene in those movies.
They are the Dean Martin
and
Frank Sinatra of today. Yeah. And you can see that was the reason
Dean?
That they were... Dean is George and Frank is Rusty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else have George Clooney and Brad Pitt been in together?
I'd have to Google it.
Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. They've never done a commercial together.
They've definitely been in something else because
I'm Googling it.
You're
right
Googling
now.
It right now.
Burn After Reading.
Ah, there
11,
it is.
Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
What the fuck was Brad Pitt in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind? Who was he in that?
He was a kid.
He was a kid? You're being funny.
Yeah.
It's got Julia Roberts. It's got Sam Rockwell, George Clooney.
He probably just had a bit part.
He probably was
like
a
small cameo.
Yeah. Okay. Like he is in Deadpool when he's the guy, Brad, who gets electrocuted.
Yeah.
Deadpool 2. No, those guys are fucking fan. That's just classic A, like triple A prime beef hunk on screen. I think that's
they're also buddies in real life, too.
That's what I think is so charming about when you find this out, right?
Yeah.
Like just when they show up on set together, maybe they don't hang out outside of that, but when they've got a friendship to play off of.
I think I remember reading somewhere, maybe it was like a TMZ thing, but like one of those kind of things.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, there were some issues there because Brad would go out drinking with Clooney.
Sure.
Because they were like drinking buddies, right?
You got to bring it on camera, man. You got to emote.
I've heard Clooney's a bit of a...
He's not just into coffee?
Party man, so.
Yeah, he's probably chilled out a little bit now.
Maybe now.
Well, he's like 60 and has kids.
Yeah, but.
Like young kids.
He got into like a motorcycle accident a couple of years back. I don't know if he's still hitting the. I know he loves his espresso. Rob, what's yours?
Mine is Will Ferrell.
And John C. fucking Riley. Yeah. Thank you. Somebody had to pick him.
I love Talladega Nights so much.
Oh, that's an amazing movie.
And I love Shake and Bake. And I love Step Brothers. Like,
I don't think there's a better comedy duo. I think they've stepped on everybody.
So and like really,
I would say there's a contender for a comedy duo of Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
I would agree with that. They are very, very good, but their comedy is different.
It is, but they are. They're both comedians.
Shaun of the Dead is so fucking good. And the fuzz is Hot Fuzz is so fucking good.
Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah.
They did lots together.
The End of the World Pub?
The World's End.
World's End, thank you.
They did like TV shows together as well. There's one called Spaced, which is pretty funny if you can ever find
it. Well, they're writing partners, right? Yes. I don't know.
They've known each other since college.
Yeah, they grew up. They've been together forever.
So they've got a thing against Riley and Farrell where Farrell and Riley
Farrell and Riley really only have those two movies.
They've got that shitty Sherlock movie that
they did. That was so bad that I don't consider it.
You want to remove that from the zeitgeist? Okay.
Yeah, it's really, really bad. But if we just look at those two movies.
Just those two movie blooper rolls, too? Oh, so good.
I'd rather watch the blooper rolls.
I agree.
I like to picture my baby Jesus wearing
I was just about to say that.
Wearing a tuxedo t-shirt.
My baby Jesus likes to party.
You know, I'm gonna fuck you up like a spider monkey.
Shut up, Grandpa.
Fuck.
But yeah, and Step Brothers is so good, you know. Can we put Pump Heads? We'll have so much more room for activities. Name your favorite non-pornographic magazine to masturbate to. Good Housekeeping. Your favorite dinosaur, Velociraptor. And I can't remember the question, but they're like, do we just become best friends? Yeah. Yes.
When he's burying him.
Do you want to go in the garage and do karate?
Yes.
When he's trying to bury him in the backyard in Step Brothers.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? Stop it.
The movie's so
funny. And then one of them's dressed up as a Nazi.
Did you do something to my drums kit? And he's like fucking puts his ball sack on the fucking drum kit. Like we are all, like I'm laughing so hard just reminiscing on scenes from that movie.
There is an improv element that I feel that Frost and Pegg, because they've known each other for so long, they know each other's buttons and their mechanics, where Farrell and Riley meet for the first time.
And they play off each other.
And they just play off each other.
But the other thing is, before that, guys, John C. Riley was considered a serious actor. He started
Hard
he
Eight.
He was a hard, serious actor. He was in Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights, Hard Eight. And there's another movie.
But then he did Talladega Nights.
Magnolia?
Everyone was like, what the fuck? This guy's so fucking funny.
Magnolia, he was the troubled cop
who
was trying to date the game show daughter, the game show host's
daughter.
The
funny thing is, though, is I always find that some of the best actors actually, like, really good, serious, dramatic actors end up being fucking so good in comedic roles and vice versa.
That's why Vince Gilligan picked, what's his dick, for Breaking Bad. Why he picked Bryan Cranston. He believes that comedic actors are more committed to serious roles than serious actors are because they have to go so far from the other side of the pendulum that he just likes pulling it out. Like a comedic actor can find the sadness in something a lot quicker, I think, than some of our favorite, like,
Cranston's so good.
Bryan Cranston's
fucking
genius.
He's so good in Seinfeld.
The dentist.
The fucking dentist. He's like, he fucking.
We're going to put you under now. Don't worry about it.
Have you heard the story behind that?
No.
So Bryan Cranston said that they were rehearsing it, and then they were finishing for the day, and then all of a sudden, like, one of the electricians was like up top in the catwalks and goes, "Hey, you know what'd be really fucking, you know what'd be really funny is you should take a pull from it first and then go." And Bryan Cranston's like, "Oh my god, that's so good!" And he told them the next day and gave the guy props and like, yeah.
That guy became a writer on the fucking show.
That was on it was on an interview on the Graham Norton show, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love shit like that.
Yeah.
Graham Norton, that's the only talk show that is still in my mind is good.
Yeah, I just wish
it was because they drink on the show.
To watch it. I can only ever see little clips of it, which I love.
Yeah, no, they drink. That's why it's fun. They don't take themselves
it's also,
seriously.
It's also, he also brings all the guests on at once.
Yeah.
And then he'll spend a little bit of time with each other, but they're all allowed to fucking jump in.
And they talk to each other as well.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah,
and you'll have like some like C-style British celebrities like that British people know really well because they're in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like these A-list Hollywood people are like, who the fuck is this, right? And but it's just, it works.
Yeah.
A-list, who the fuck are you? A-list. Yeah, it's
exactly.
Perfect. Yeah, no, exactly. He's him and Craigie Ferg. Craig Ferguson and Graham Norton are like, Ferguson would break from the questions and he would just do full improv with the guest, ask on the
fly.
Well,
he basically got fired.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't fucking fall in line with the media.
He was, he
they're like, you're out.
Yeah. But Graham Norton, too, has fun. He pushes great questions. And you're totally right.
Do you like beard or no beard, Graham Norton?
Beard.
Like beard.
Beard.
Me, too.
Yeah.
Okay, what's yours?
Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
We've got TV.
You like Ed TV.
I like Ed TV. I really like Surfer Dude. It's an unknown.
You know what?
Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson.
I like Surfer Dude too. It's so bad. But it's pretty funny.
It's just a stoner comedy about a dude who comes back from surfing in Australia and realizes he's lost his sponsorship. He's lost the guys who paid him, and now him and Harrelson have to figure out how to survive. And the only way they can do it is if they start acting in this reality TV show about surfers in Malibu. It's just a piece of shit, but it's fucking fun.
And they're so good in True Detective.
Oh, my God.
That first season of True Detective is fucking unreal.
There's never going to be another season of crime television.
I've still not seen it.
It's worth
watching.
It's
a clinic.
Yeah, no, I know.
Don't consider it as a series that you would need to watch as a series.
One story.
Each one is its own individual story.
Each season. Oh, yeah, I knew that for sure. But yeah, it's been on my watch list forever, and I've just like, but I know it's so good. Like, I want to sit down. I want to be ready.
It's one of the best things HBO's done in the last decade.
Wow.
It really is. And the second season didn't hit like the first season did. It had an interesting story, but it just didn't have the two of them.
It's Wire good.
I never saw the Wire.
That's a great comparison. No, but those two are my guys. They're funny, they're sweet, they're sincere, and they're buddies, right? Yeah. They hang out with Willie Nelson offset, get stoned, hang out. Like, when you know that two friends are acting together, it just, for me, because I like knowing how the sausage is made,
It's
why
for
would
a lack
ever
of
want to know that?
Guys, it's Woody from Cheers and all right.
Yeah.
And it's two guys who have no business being as good as they fucking are. But Woody Harrelson, natural born characters, Matthew McConaughey.
Natural born characters or natural born killers?
Killers, thank you. He's a natural born character actor, but he's also a natural born killer. McConaughey with
failure to launch.
Failure to fuck. No, I was going to say.
I lose a guy in 10 days.
I was going to say, like, Dallas Buyers Club.
Interstellar.
Interstellar,
right? Like,
This was fun watching you try and
thank
fish
you.
For these. I just sit here and I'm like,
I had a really early breakfast this morning. Blood sugar drops. Brain goes next. But
it's fucking 5 o'clock.
It's dinner time. But like they can separate and do their shit, and then when they get together, it's just fun and awesome. Like, it's either dark crime shit or dumb stoner shit, but they just know how to play.
Yeah.
So those are my boys. The list that was paired for us. Thank you, Brightside.
So I was very like hit and miss with this list.
So was I.
I didn't like it. Well, there was some, but
yeah.
We'll go. Do they deserve or do they not deserve to be on this list? First up, Adam Sandler, Rob Schneider. I mean, that's
I don't really consider them a duo, though.
I don't either. I consider
it's a group, right? There's a group of people.
Well, it's Happy Madison Productions.
Yeah.
But Rob Schneider always just plays a supporting character.
He does. Not
a, he steals the scenes he's in.
Yeah.
But
Hip hop? Yeah. Hip hop anonymous? Yeah. Right? He's
funny.
A supporting
It's
kind of
like all the guys from, like, you've seen the movie Grandma's Boy?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're all in there without Adam, right?
Did I break it?
Yeah.
What's high score? Yeah. Did I just break the game? What's high
what
score,
is this?
Guys?
Was this Cypress Hill concert in here? that's Schneider.
Yeah, you're right. No, I don't think they're a great acting duo because they don't act together. They just act in the same production.
Yeah. That's agree.
Yeah. And it's Adam basically going, hey, Rob, you're my buddy, and I know you can do this character
really well.
Really fucking well, and just
So let's do
probably
it
gives him
over.
Like an outline of what he wants a character, and then Rob just writes the character.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And then keeps him in, you know, the lifestyle that he's accustomed to. Here's a job here and there. You get to keep your health insurance because you're acting. Next on the list, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean,
they don't have a lot of range together. It seems that they're the same every time I see them.
Well, I was going to say here, based on these pictures, is it the same movie just released 3 years apart?
These are just different iterations of when they were reincarnated in different timelines.
Yeah, it's well, like, I know that they did that.
I don't think I saw any of these movies.
Yeah, I've seen Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Lining Playbook, right?
No, why would I watch that?
What's the third one here, the 2015 one? Is that the one where she's the lady that's coming, invents the mop?
So I've got I Love Jennifer. I played her with any movie later. She says, I love you, Jennifer. Sorry. Later, the actress insisted on casting Cooper as her partner in her new movie, Serena. That's...
Yes, Serena's one. So Serena's the one about this woman that was like a stay-at-home, was a single mom, I think. And she basically invents this product, like it's the best mop ever. And then she gets on the Home Shopping Network and all this kind of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. I guess they just must enjoy each other's...
Yeah.
Chemistry, but I don't think they're really...
Honestly, they probably just work well on and off set, right?
Yeah.
Good
working relationship.
I think that's probably what it is, right? Is like, you know, and, you know, Bradley Cooper's like, what, 46, 47?
She's late 20s, early 30s.
So maybe there's almost kind of like a big brother, big sister kind of role there where he's kind of, you know...
Yeah, I get it.
Maybe that's what it is too. Who knows?
Yeah.
But honestly, they're probably just, like you said, they're good friends and they get along well offset, and that's why they've continued to do roles together.
Well, and you've also got the studios who are like, we need a pair who looks good together, right? You start getting
And works well together. Because you don't want to put two people together where there's just fucking drama on the set.
Very much so.
Because directors fucking hate that shit.
Well, yeah. And I mean, there's going to be drama, I'm sure, that's going to ensue. So the least going in, so that you've got the least coming out.
It's like these two. I think these two are known to work well on set too.
Yeah, I agree.
Whereas I don't think you're gonna see, you know, Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams in a movie again.
No, you're not. No. But like La La Land clinched it for me. I mean, I've seen...
I've actually never seen La La Land.
I liked La La Land. It was pretty good.
Never seen it.
For musicals, it did have me. Shout out Damien Chazelle again.
What's the first one? Is the one with
Crazy,
Steve Carell, right?
Crazy Stupid Love. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never saw that one.
Oh, dude, it's so funny.
It's very funny.
Steve Carell is basically get separated from his wife. And then Ryan Gosling takes him under his wing and turns him into just like a fucking stud. There's this one scene where he shows up and he goes, "Okay, we're gonna go shopping tomorrow." He shows up and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. Are you Steve Jobs, the inventor of Apple computers?" Because he's wearing New Balance sneakers. He goes, "Take these fucking off." He takes the New Balance sneakers and throws them off this fucking balcony and goes, "Let's go shopping."
And then in the background, you hear the Wilhelm scream because some dude gets hit in the head with a New Balance sneaker.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it is. Maybe we'll
give that a try.
It's cute. It's done
it's,
in the
it's,
old.
It's funny, and it's kind of got like a little bit of a twist at the end. You're just like,
Yeah. Yeah.
I won't tell you.
No spoilers.
Lawless was the one from 2013. That's the gangster movie.
Yeah, I never saw it.
They
look great together,
Sean Penn's in it.
I watched half of that movie, and I kind of lost interest. I never finished it.
Why? Why didn't you find a funny kid? You didn't like the way they talked?
I don't know.
It's that cheesy 30s crime film noir kind of shit.
It was trying too hard to be a film noir, but it wasn't edgy enough.
I agree. It was violent as fuck, but...
Yeah.
Marion Cotillard and Guillaume Canet.
I don't know this Guillaume.
I don't know these either, but in that third picture, his arms are insanity.
He also looks like...
Holy shit.
He also looks like he got work done on his face.
I thought he would just been hit with a bat.
Yeah.
He's massive in that third
picture. She's great in Inception.
I love watching Marion Cotillard. I loved her in... what was the Michael Mann movie about... Johnny Depp plays John Dillinger.
Oh yeah,
she played Dillinger's love interest in the film.
That's right.
Yeah, she's also Batman. She was in.
She was Batman.
She is Batman. But this is obviously the French
in that
stuff.
Movie. She
I don't think they should be on
in
the list.
The movie. She identified as Batman though. So please,
sorry.
These are movies. Love Me If You Dare, The Little Prince. And
I think these are some. I think they're French movies.
They did.
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting that they did work together on the Little Prince cartoon. That's a really good book. that has a lot of different themes in it. It's a kid's book, but it yeah. really...
France has a huge kind of isolated film scene that we don't get a lot of. We get the odd film.
It's because we don't like to read our movies.
I think Americans just don't like French people.
Or can't read.
And we got
I'm
someone.
I'm going with the latter.
He's closest to them out of all of us from his childhood. Yeah. Number five, obviously, Can't Turn Left, Ben Stiller with Owen Wilson. I mean,
hard yes.
I just don't like the example they gave Zoolander and then Zoolander 2.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, Zoolander 2 sucked.
It was another. It went back to the
I won't,
well. It had its moments.
I won't rewatch it, but it did make
but
me.
But Zoolander is fucking gold.
Yes, for sure.
It's gold.
They did other stuff too, though, didn't they?
Well, you've also
Starsky and Hutch.
Starsky and Hutch. Meet the Parents.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
Meet the Parents.
Right.
But these are three movies where they're really kind of playing two main characters that are really playing off each other, whereas the other ones are, you know, Meet the Parents, he just happens to be a character in, right? But steals that scene. Royal Tenenbaums, they're characters, but they actually don't have much interaction within the film.
And, like, they're great and funny together, but they don't, like, I just don't see them acting. Like, the only acting they do is as Zoolander and what the fuck's his name?
Yeah, but how is that any different than the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly?
It's not.
They're just
it's
a
not.
Good comic
it's just
duo.
A, they're good together.
Yeah, they
together.
Were good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take that. Number six.
I think they both also have a very good appreciation for film because, you know, Owen Wilson got his start by, you know, really helping to create and push Bottle Rocket, right?
That's right.
Right, with his brother. Yeah. And Ben Stiller is arguably a fantastic fucking director.
Nobody gives that man enough credit. You need to watch Severance to understand how good of a director
Ben Stiller is. Oh, I've seen Severance.
Listener, if you haven't,
how about The Incredible Life of Walter Mitty?
Oh, such a fun fucking movie.
Tropic Thunder is fucking a...
I always forget that he did direct
it. It's not just like a super good comedy. It's a really well done fucking movie.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I actually rewatched it recently.
So
I
did
like,
I
was like, I just want to...
Never go full.
I just want to... Yeah. But I wanted to watch Robert Downey Jr. in blackface just to see if it was as bad as I thought it could... Because I remember liked the movie. And then I watched the movie again. I'm like, no, it was
It's not bad.
It's perfect. Like, it's as...
The joke isn't on being black. The joke is on a white guy thinking he's black.
Yeah.
And if you get offended by that, I don't know what to do for
you.
Well, but the other
the
other thing is they also at the beginning they talk about how he does like a special surgery to actually be like that. But
right.
Yeah. It turns out it's makeup, and he's like, "What the fuck?" You're like, "When did he have time to touch that up?"
Sitting in a hot jungle, dripping.
I also love
face.
The previews at the beginning for the farts and that one
booty sweat. Yeah,
and then for the fucking. 5-time Academy Award winning, and it's fucking Tobey Maguire.
Yes.
and when you see that, you're just like, Tobey Maguire is so fucking awesome that you did just this one little scene.
Thank you for the walk on, Tobey.
Yeah, totally.
Number six, Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter. You got.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I thought they were a couple for the longest time.
Then you find out that if they are, it's a really weird relationship.
Well, no, it's just because
Daddy Burton involved.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's been some times where the two of them have fucked and Tim Burton's just watched.
He's
probably on film.
Did Johnny Depp cuck Tim Burton?
They probably had a sex scene in one of these movies, and they were like, okay, we're going to go full on
I guarantee you
action.
It's in the Mad Hatter Queen of Hearts costumes.
Yeah. For sure. They could both come back from fucking after and their makeup's just all smudged. What were you two doing? Getting into character. the Alice in Wonderland, fantastic. The one below, what's the... The Lone Ranger. No, that's not one that we want to talk about. What was... It's a remake of an older film. It's like a haunted house that he did. It's on Netflix right now. Fuck, what's the name of it?
I don't know.
It's whatever, it doesn't matter. Fact check us.
I didn't hate The Lone Ranger.
I didn't hate The Lone Ranger. I thought it was stupid. I thought that movie had plot holes.
Yeah. Oh, it had tons of plot holes.
I don't think
Armie Hammer's a good actor. It for what it was fun.
It was fun.
Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
I don't think Armie Hammer's that terrible.
No, I like him. What's he done that's so bad?
He was the Winklevi.
I don't know what that means.
So, because he was in the movie Social Network, the Social Network,
he played both
twins. He played the Winkle twins. He doesn't like him because he played that character.
Yeah.
So that's on him. That's him projecting a character onto an actor.
Okay, I was gonna say,
but isn't he a piece of shit anyway? Like,
he's a cannibal that tried to rape a bunch of women through Instagram and Snapchat.
And he's basically blacklisted from Hollywood. Right?
Oh yeah, he's fucked. Yeah.
Like the actor.
Good thing he has actual Armie Hammer money.
Yeah.
So check this out. His name is Armie Hammer.
Yeah.
But his family owns Arm and Hammer.
Okay.
Like the fucking. Like baking soda company.
They don't. They're oil money. But Arm & Hammer is the name of the oil company.
Right.
Founded by his great-great-great-grandfather, and they've got one of those dynasty families.
But didn't they own the baking
possibly.
Soda, too? Yeah.
Well, no, because the great-grandfather is Arm
& Hammer.
Well, no, that's his name, Arm.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know about the Arm & Hammer thing, but, yeah, he comes from old money, and he's a piece of shit.
Oh.
I watched a three-hour doc on him, how, like, he wanted to eat women and tie them up, and he was into some...
But is that, like where someone goes, oh, look, you're so cute, I want to eat your toes, or is
no.
it like, no, I want to, or do I want to, like,
hey,
or do I want to, like, you know, crash land in the Andes and eat you?
If anything, I got a lot of patience for a lot of weird shit that goes on in Hollywood, but when you're like, I want to take
adrenochrome?
Yeah, when you get into adrenochrome, my patience has ceased to exist. When you get into, I want to eat.
I love that that the plot of Monsters Incorporated
is adrenochrome. if you lace them together. It's not that far
now,
apart.
Now, Dan's going to go home and Google Monsters, Inc. Adrenochrome.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do that.
What do you think a child's scream is, buddy?
I don't know.
It's adrenochrome.
Oh.
Yeah. Think about it.
I don't want to.
So adrenochrome is where if you scare children or right at the moment of like killing them, the body produces adrenochrome, which they extract, and it keeps actors
right.
young forever.
Monsters.
But
yeah,
Monsters,
yeah.
Inc.
Yeah,
is basically extracting screams to make energy for their world.
Yeah.
So fucked up. Anyway, let's keep going on with the list.
Sure. I don't like these two, Kristen Stewart and Jesse Eisenberg.
I just don't like these actors.
I saw Adventureland. It's not that great.
Adventureland was meh.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is great.
I like Jesse Eisenberg in the Catch Me If You Can movies.
Yes, I do.
Land.
Yeah,
yeah.
The arrogant,
and he was
version.
Great. And he was great in The Social Network.
I never saw The Social Network.
You should watch it. It's a Fincher movie.
It's a beautiful Fincher
movie.
It's
good.
Is it?
It's good.
It's 42,000 takes of awesome.
It's good.
Yeah, no, I don't. I haven't watched these two do a lot.
It makes you hate Zuckerberg the right amount.
Oh, I already hate him a lot though.
Shailene Woodley, number 8, with Ansel Elgort.
I don't know who they
I've
are.
Never. I. You know what? I mean. These are a couple movies that, like, I haven't, like, yeah.
Does it say what movies they are?
The Fault in Our Stars was one of them.
The 2015 one is that series.
Race or Maze? Is it The Maze?
No, not The Maze one. It's the post-apocalyptic one where there's, like, the different factions, and then when you get to a certain age, you get to choose which faction you want to go live
in. Yeah, yeah. Number 4? Number 7?
I can't remember.
Fuck.
Who knows?
I don't know. And Anson Elgott, he was Baby Driver. Did you see Baby
Driver? I love
Baby
Driver.
Is a lot of fun. Well, yeah. I mean, that's
such
Edgar.
A great movie. Yeah.
Edgar
Wagerite.
Wagerite. But yeah, I think we can move on from these two. Number 9.
Love these guys.
Love these guys.
Good old Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
You know why I love these guys? Have you ever seen the picture of the two of them when they're 16 and they're in like a photo booth together?
No.
Like they were buddies in like high school.
Yeah.
They both get into fucking Harvard. And I don't care what there's people that say, oh, fucking Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are idiots. They both got into fucking Harvard.
Neither of those people are idiots.
No.
Like, they got into, like, it's not easy to get into fucking Harvard.
No.
You have to have crazy SATs. You got to write a massive essay. You got to go through an interview process.
It's not easy to become movie stars either.
It totally isn't. It's not easy to, like, fucking,
and,
like, write an original story and win a fucking Oscar.
Yeah.
Your first bat, too.
First time up, yeah.
Right. Like, that's
I love that Dogma's in this.
So do yeah. I. And I don't know.
I think my favorite is when I don't even know if they were both in it, but it's one of the Kevin Smith ones when it was just a reference to him. It's like there's another dead hooker in Affleck's
yes
trailer,
and he's like, I didn't even have a hooker last night, and I was just like, that's just you know that's because he was doing super serious shit around that time, and then he goes on set.
Who, Ben Affleck?
Affleck, yeah, I think so.
I'm pretty sure he was doing Reindeer Games at that time, not super serious.
Well, not super serious, but not like not comedies kind of stuff,
like Paycheck.
Yeah.
I like Paycheck.
Like Bounce.
But I love Philip K. Dick, any Philip K. Dick movie.
Yeah, futuristic world shit. No, and they're also coming back together to do the new Nike story. They,
okay.
How the Air Jordan shoe was pitched to Michael Jordan.
Scroll down so we can see what the third thing
they
is.
They only put two up on this list.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, we know them because they're powerhouses, but they don't do a fuck ton together.
They don't need to. They're exactly fucking giant movie stars on
their
own.
They did in the beginning, right? They did. They were always popping up.
It is.
Stuff.
You know what the funny thing is? Is Affleck is probably more in the fucking zeitgeist, but Matt Damon's a better actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And the idiot who turned down 10% from James Cameron for Avatar.
But dude, like The Martian is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a comedy. Did you know?
Oh, well, have you ever read the book?
No, but I just thought it was,
you know,
funny when it was nominated.
You know the first line? The first line is, I'm fucked.
I just love how he's like, I'm going to science my way out of this fucking mess.
Yeah.
And starts building potatoes out of his own shit. Yeah. Like, it's surprisingly funny.
Read the book.
Yeah.
The book is even better.
I think I have. Right,
and it just adds, because they wanted the movie to be 2 hours and 20 minutes, not 3 hours, so they couldn't put everything. But the book just explains some of the science so well, it's great. Chris Evans and
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, they were in that teen movie.
Didn't,
not another teen movie.
Okay, yeah, I knew that, but I didn't know they did actual other not parody films together. I thought they first met as Black Widow and Cap.
No.
I had no idea that they
I think they've been friends for a long time since that like first movie.
That first teen movie where they're like trying to steal like the test or something, and he's the jock and she's the nerd. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, well, there's the Nanny Diaries is one of them.
Go to the top one. That's that first one right there. She's okay. He's the jock, and she's kind of like the cool, like the edgy goth
totally,
girl.
Yeah, had no fucking clue.
That movie was like 98, 99? Oh, it says 2004. I thought it was older than that. Oh, okay. Obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. Swingers, please.
Was Swingers 01? I feel like Swingers was like 95.
It's early.
That fucking date's wrong.
I have a feeling.
Which
you're
website
right
is
about
this?
That. It's called Brightside.
Well, they're
think.
Fucking idiots.
Yeah, they are. But just
it's called IMDb to check this shit.
So you've got Swingers, which is fan fucking tastic. Right?
Swingers is 96.
Yeah, I don't. Could this be Belly?
Yeah, I don't think that's Swingers.
Oh, is that Belly?
I think that could be Belly because they still look young.
And I know they.
Well, this is before John Favreau got like freakishly like. Wide.
Yeah, well then you've also got the one where they go away on vacation together.
The third one?
The third one. Yeah, but what's the name of the fucking movie?
it's the one where there's that scene where he's like playing fucking
I think it says in
band.
The spiel. Yeah, and yeah. He, what, yeah,
and there's
go
that guy,
the
guy's he's like, my name's Stanley, and it's spelt with a C and a.
My bad, it's not Belly, it's Maid that the first image is
oh,
from.
Oh yeah. Okay,
but yeah,
I don't think we said either. This is John Favreau and Vince Vaughn.
Yes, sorry,
for the
listener.
People that aren't
oh yeah, that can't see what we're seeing.
Yeah, we don't post these.
But
links,
I would say,
so.
I mean, their best movie is still Swingers. Like that
yeah,
movie is
you're
so
money.
Fucking good.
You're so yeah. fucking money.
John Favreau wrote and directed it. Like,
do you know that they filmed in the casinos? Without booking a time, they just showed up and shot scenes as fast as they could because they couldn't afford to shut down a floor.
I did hear that, yeah.
So they shoot when no one's watching and the security guards are gone, and then they put away the cameras when they come back and then they do it. I'm like, that's so metal.
John Favreau is the fucking greatest too. Who would have thought, like the guy in Swingers, and then for a lot of people, then you saw him on fucking Friends, and you're like, you know, as playing Monica's fucking, and then like the guy. Arguably has made like the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Four Christmases.
Elf.
I know. I'm just kidding. He's the brother in Four Christmases.
I thought you were serious.
No.
You know, like fucking saves fucking Star Wars.
Big time.
And created the fucking MCU.
Well, and who knew he could fucking direct, right? Like that wasn't, I mean, you knew he directed Swingers, but could he really direct? Because that's an independent rebel film, right? That's not that's not a big budget, $100 million.
Was Iron Man his first, like,
big movie.
Big movie.
Yeah. And everyone was like, you're giving us to John. Everyone was, but they did it because Elf was so good. And I think that's why they did a chance on him.
There's a lot of trust
him.
In him.
And I think there was some back end stuff that we obviously don't hear about or know.
Oh, for sure.
But holy, that fucking first Iron Man movie.
It's
so,
one of the best.
It's so fucking good. When he at the end of the fucking press conference he goes, I am Iron Man. Yeah. And then it cuts in with a fucking Black Sabbath song. You're just like, yes!
I read recently that, I don't know if it's true or not. It could probably isn't, that he wasn't actually supposed to say I was Iron Man there, but Downey Jr. decided he was going to do it himself.
Breaking from the script.
And then because the reactions from the audience were so good, like they just kept it.
Oh, that movie was Couples Retreat.
Thank you very much.
I did
much.
Like that movie.
When he's like, my da-da-da-da's, when he takes off his pants and he's got the thong on.
What was the name of that one character, though? His name, my name is Stanley, and it's spelled with a C. And...
Wasn't he the yoga instructor?
No, he was like the main guy, like the concierge.
Yes.
Okay, it's Stanley, spelled with a C and an EY at the end. So it's on IMDb, it's spelled S-C-T-A-N-L-E-Y.
Stanley.
I love it.
Next on the list, which is everybody's favorite couple from the 90s, Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler. They fucking work well together.
Only in two movies.
Yeah. Which one? 50 First Dates, Wedding Singer?
And Wedding Singer.
You don't think, like, what was the new one they did?
It sucks.
Where, like, they go to the, they go
it's
to, like, on
fucking
a, on
terrible.
A, the, is that the one where they go to the safari together?
It's terrible.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
Well, and that's part of, and everybody gives him shit for it, but that big deal he signed with Netflix, like, that's part of that world of,
yeah.
He's now making films
and that's
for streaming instead of these classics that we love.
But these movies could have been made for streaming too.
They could have been
just,
both of those for sure.
But they're just better made, better written, and they're more fun. Like Blended, which is this is the one
I'm talking about.
One right here. It's kind of like let's take two people in their 40s and blah blah blah, and it's just not
it's
as
very
fun.
Situational.
Like, Wedding Singer is fucking hilarious, and it's more of making fun of the 80s and like just that is so
they were
great.
Yeah.
It was so
could have been people
so
at a wedding.
And 50 First Dates is just a fucking hilarious premise.
Yeah, no, I when I first watched 50 First Dates, I was like, what is this garbage? And then like 15 minutes, 20 minutes in, I'm like, this is funny.
50 First Dates is like when you're watching 50 First Dates, it has that same moment. Like, have you seen Palm Springs?
Yes.
And you're like, at first I was like, all right, Palm Springs, fucking, like, I'll fucking watch this. It's gonna be funny. I had no clue. And then I watched it. I was like, holy fuck, it's like fucking Groundhog Day. This is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I had to say.
I heard that was everybody's reaction.
Because I had no idea going into Palm Springs.
Zero.
Either.
And well, and that's
it
fun.
Was amazing.
When they release like a huge plot twist that changes the base of the entire film.
And it's basically a sci-fi fucking plot twist, which is just like.
Yeah.
I think they did so well in Wedding Singer. Like, they're just that cute American couple that you just want to root for, that you love. Like, watching him sing I Want to Grow Old with You on the fucking plane at the end, and Billy Idol's holding it. Like, they melt hearts together. And
in that movie.
Yeah, but that example of the sweet, sincere couple that we hope exists in real life, that we all try to be, but, you know, fucking fuck up at. I think that's the magic of the two on screen. I don't think.
Yeah, but I think that was only, like, we're talking about couples over multiple movies. I think they had it, but I don't think they.
Oh, they're going back
continuously. I don't think.
I don't think that chemistry is there anymore.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, it's been washed, it's been repeated. Obviously, we can't not talk about this.
Is this the last one?
I think this is. Yeah. We're getting close to the last one. Mr. Pacino and Mr. De Niro. Obviously, 1974 with The Godfather, The Godfather 2. The one they did where they were cops together in 2008.
It's okay.
It's okay, but it's Heat.
Why the fuck is Heat not on there?
That's what is mind-blowing to me, that they reference Heat in the writing, but there's not a picture of the two of them having coffee in that fucking diner. There is no better fucking
like
scene.
Heat is one of the best movies of the 90s.
It's the
period.
100%. But also in that movie, they're only on screen together for like
12 minutes.
Oh, that, you, yeah. I was
it's something,
that
something
yeah,
crazy
yeah.
But it's,
short
it's
like
Bruce in Jaws. You wait until you get the shark, and the shark is the money shot. The money shot is the two of them in the shootout in the end, right? And then, like, it just is such.
That movie is.
And the chase down, like, by the fucking
airport.
The
fucking shootout in
the
middle.
The bank shootout,
the way that Kilmer moves and reloads.
I heard that they were showing that to like, military places. Like, this is a perfect
movie. That shootout is based on an actual bank heist that went sideways, and they talked to the guys who were there for the first, like, for the actual bank heist.
Yeah.
They were the cops. And
I thought it was the other way around. They made Heat, and then a few years later, guys literally did the same fucking thing in L.A.
There's something
I think
there.
I think it's the real-life event actually mimicked what happened in Heat later.
I know it's some. Okay, I think
that's what it was.
I love
it. Yeah.
It's fucking mind-blowing how he can like,
and the sound, like, when you watch
that
movie, that
shootout,
on a, like,
good.
I don't know if you've ever seen it in the theater. So I saw it in the theater when it
first
came out.
I didn't.
It is so and I mean, it's 25 years ago, so like you're trying to remember. That's the kind of movie I would love to see
today, a re-release,
or even just like, you know how Cineplex will sometimes just show old movies,
but I
never see that come up. I would love to see that in the theater.
Oh yeah, I would definitely see that again.
Yeah,
the cop movie they made like 10 years ago together, where one of them's like a corrupt cop and the other one's like telling the story. It's such a piece of hot garbage.
Do you know what it's called?
Hot garbage.
I don't know. I mean, and The Irishman was okay.
I didn't watch it. I had no interest. I'm like, this is a really long movie, and apparently it's a lot of just chitty-chatty, and I'm like, no thanks.
I just couldn't get into it. I tried. I really tried, because I love everyone that was like associated with it.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting story.
And it's Scorsese, and it's a cool story, but I got maybe 40 minutes into it, and I actually felt sad. And I was worried that it was going to dampen my thoughts on Goodfellas and some of the other stuff, and Casino and that kind of stuff. So I just stopped.
We got more actually.
I love Franco and Reagan.
Yeah, they're great.
Pineapple Express is so fucking good.
And End of the World. I mean,
End of the World's okay.
It's
okay. That's Jake Bear. That's Jay Bear show right there.
Yeah, by the way.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, yeah.
But what's the one?
I love The Interview.
I never saw it. I was afraid to watch it. I thought someone would come for me if I watched I'm just kidding. But like, I just let that one pass because of all the shit that was going on around it at the time.
You should watch it. It's great.
Pineapple Express, genius. End of the World, super fun. Watching Rogan and Franco play actual Rogan and Franco in End of the World is very funny.
Yeah.
Like, Franco's the douchey actor, and Rogan's caught between his Canadian buddy and his douchey American.
Yeah.
It's a great setup, but they're great at writing together, but I don't get excited when I see them. I think what they've done is good, but I don't think they're in the same status as Pacino and De Niro or what we're coming next to. I don't know.
Yeah, but I would say they're in the same status as, you know, Ferrell and John C. Reilly or Owen Wilson.
I think because they do, they write together and stuff too, so it's not just their on-screen chemistry.
They're like a dick and fart joke version of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah,
right. They're the American version of those two.
But we all like dick and fart jokes.
We do. So. We do. But I feel that that's too much of their, like, for me personally, that's too much of what I get from them. Where John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell, I get performance comedy, I get racy comedy, I get dick and fart. Like, I get a selection of all of the things.
I still think it's cut from the same stream.
Fair enough. Last, my guys, my pick, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. EdTV.
Surfer Dude is referenced, and
True Detective.
True motherfucking. Dan, you have to.
Woody Harrelson has hair in it.
Well, I love both of these actors, and I've loved everything that I've seen of both of these actors. There's no real reason for me not to have watched it, other than the fact that I've built it
so
much, and I've got to make it. But
it's too much shit.
Emily is away till Tuesday or something, so maybe I'll just throw it on.
I mean, it's one of those things that you can't watch on the peripheral or in the background.
That's why I've been waiting.
You have to be engaged with it. You got to put your phone away because there's a lot happens.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things that'll happen in the first couple episodes. They are like, oh fuck, later.
Yeah,
so it has a strong tie-in.
Have you guys ever seen Broadchurch?
No,
I've heard of it.
It's a British crime
show.
Right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen trailers for that.
I figure it's something similar to the same.
Yeah, yeah,
Broadchurch.
Yeah.
Is, if you haven't, you should definitely watch it. But I have a feeling it's the same kind of like that. It's a detective story, and he's going around. They're doing their things, and it's just a slow build. And you have to pay attention because there's clues in Broadchurch. There's clues in the episodes that you really have no idea until after you're feeling it, and then you look back and you're like, oh,
you decompress at the end of the watch. Yeah. That's what this is, and it's two detectives who come from different sides of the crime world.
Yeah.
And they're forced to be partners, and they don't get along, and they each have their demons.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer. I look forward to watching it.
There's so much story between the two of them that they develop in such a short miniseries. It's fantastic.
It also transcends two different timelines too, right?
Yeah, it does.
Which is cool, and it jumps back and forth.
Hang on, stop talking about it. You're gonna spoil it.
I want your Saturday night to be spent on this.
We literally haven't spoiled anything. All we've done is just made it more enticing for you to watch.
Yeah,
you know what? I'm trying to get your heart. I'm gonna watch it this weekend at some point, probably.
Your kids are gonna be like, why are you watching this, Dad? Why? Why?
I was shamed into it.
We want to watch The Secret of Nymph.
Put on Return to Oz now. That's the end. That's the list. I mean, I will.
Do you have a duo that wasn't on the list that you would want to pick?
Off the top of my head, not really. I mean, I don't. I know you did. I don't have one.
I got one more that wasn't said. Amy Poehler and Tina Fey.
Oh,
okay.
I think those two on screen together are phenomenal.
Sadly, this list has been shortchanged to just men and no women. But the two of them together, writing and
Everything. I can't remember the Bridesmaids and there's a couple others like they've done together for sure. And it's just funny.
And it makes, they were kind of they were in Mean Girls together, and that's one of my. Guilty pleasures.
I don't think it should be defined as a guilty pleasure. I think it's a fantastic
movie. Well, she plays the teacher.
Yeah.
And Mean Girls, Tina Fey wrote that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's Tina Fey and Amy Poehler who wrote that.
They write a lot of
stuff. They're writing
together.
Partners. They
came up with like 30 Rock and Parks and Rec together. And they were like, I'm going to do this, you do that kind of thing.
And that's an interesting take because they don't act as much together outside of SNL. Like they held the desk together for years. Yeah. But
no, Tina Fey only wrote this.
Okay. Yeah. But either way, they work a lot together.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's not so much on screen, but the shit
they
produce behind
the
scenes.
There's that improv club in Chicago. Were they part of that? Second City. Were they on Second City?
Second City is Chicago.
It sounds right.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like they were
either that or the Groundlings. Groundlings is L.A. Second City is Chicago.
I think it's Second City. Yeah, sure. Because they were there around the same time as Steve Carell as well.
Yeah, which is why
everybody who's anybody comes out of Second City.
It's so crazy that Steve Carell didn't make it big though until like 40-year-old virgin. And he was literally
Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah.
It felt, you know, when you're like touching a woman's breast and it feels like a bag of sand.
He used that on me the other day in a chat. Yeah. I said something and he was like, that's like when a woman when Steve Carell describes what a breast feels like.
That's like when somebody describes a breast feeling like a bag of sand and everyone in the chat was just like piled on Pedro. I was literally a god for 7 minutes. It was amazing.
All right, listener. That brings us to the end of the show, the end of the film, the end of the project. Thank you so much for listening. Send us your takes on some of your older aspects of film that you haven't been able to see in a while and that you miss, and or your favorite acting duo by leaving a voicemail, link in bio, okay? Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you follow us, go to that link in the bio, hit leave a voicemail. You can record up to 5 minutes. Your opinion will be listened to. It may not be aired, but it will be listened to, and then we'll put it on the show and we'll argue with you one way. What do you think of that? So say something interesting if you want to be on the show. Speaking of following us, do it on whatever podcast player you're listening to right now. So you can always expect the Real Debaters to show up. Like, follow, whatever the fuck it is in Apple or Spotify or what have you. Hit it so that you are subscribed. And then if you want to stay in the world of us, it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. There's YouTube Shorts where we clip all this shit. Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to follow the show, to know what we're doing, so you can be a part of fucking movie trivia in April with Rob and me, and Dan will be there, I'm sure. And
at some point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just don't.
Nobody's invited me to be on anything yet, but I'll be around.
We'll use you. We'll put you in a cute outfit. We'll figure out a way to use you. But yeah. So
a tutu with a lightsaber.
Yeah. Perfect.
So my Thursday outfit.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever she tells you to wear on Thursdays. Yeah. Perfect. But yeah. So Twitter is Real Debaters Pod. Instagram is Real Debaters Pod, spelled REEL. Facebook, The Real Debaters Podcast, and RD Pod Shorts on YouTube for our short channel. That's it. That's all, kids. I've been Michael Petro.
I'm Rob Strachan.
I'm Dan Bond.
And you should watch all the movies. Say bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Spanish ladies.